Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
T-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Hey everybody, welcome to Weekend Confirmed from San Francisco, California, and the fantastic CBS Interactive GameSpot Studios. Thanks to Mr. John Davison and GameSpot for hosting us here today.
Hello. Well, everything says CNET on it.
Well, do you still use the CNET brand?
On GameSpot? No, we...
I mean, around CBSI.
We are CNET adjacent. You're
Anyone who's been around Los Angeles knows all the adjacents. Marina adjacent, Venice adjacent. So it's just CNET adjacent. That's the new GameSpot.
Yeah.
Awesome. And next to John Davison is one of our most favorite other alums of the show, Mr. Mark McDonald, all the way from Tokyo, Japan.
All the way here to do this. GDC
Which is awesome.
Happened to be the same week, but...
weird coincidence, that.
That's what I'm, this is what I'm here for, yeah. I know. I was like, this is great. There's actually some conference going on. Yep.
I miss you, Mark. I'm just going to tell you that in a
Was this the secret thing
romantic...
that you were holding back?
Well, hold on. I
introduced
Jeff
before the show. Okay.
I have to introduce Jeff.
Yes.
Which is Mr. Jeff Cannata, who's right here to my right.
Yes, I'm here.
Who also very generously consoled me with whiskey for my iPad disappearing from my backpack
last night.
There
was a thievery that happened. You were robbed. You were held at gunpoint, I hear. There's a tale to tell.
There was a car chase as well,
yes.
I heard, yeah.
Were you explosions. Drunk when you lost your iPad?
No, actually, I literally wasn't drinking last night.
Okay, I was just a random question.
No.
But why are we not drinking this fine?
We just need containers.
Really?
Or we could just pass the bottle around.
That would be like the old days.
We could just pass the bottle around.
Now we're getting somewhere.
I like how it's called Red Breast, because actually it should be called Red Faced. What is it, Joe John? I didn't even actually look. It just looks like
it's
whiskey.
It's a 12-year-old Irish single pot still. And it is matured in the finest oak casks.
That sounds pretty delicious.
The card. There's a card in here, the place that we got this from. This is totally sidetracking.
I thought you wrote a card
show,
to Garnett. Like,
look how cool
about
that card
loss
is.
iPad.
Oh, that is a really
cool
card. You had a cask?
Yeah.
Ooh.
It's
Jeff
Cannata
is the most amazing friend. He's such a great guy. Seriously.
Guys.
A moment.
Aww. All right.
And so I can now spring on Mark.
It's going to be good.
Yeah, there's been some build up to this, folks. So,
Mabadabada.
So, are you trying to do the manamana? Is that what?
Manamana.
So, for lunch, when I got here,
Right
off the bat, I went to this great Japanese place that makes ramen. And guess what they had? They had a special kind of ramen I'd never heard of before.
Yeah.
They had, and I'll probably screw this up, but you can correct me, Mabadofu ramen.
Whoa, really?
Yes.
So, no, you didn't
see,
screw
now
it up. Mapo tofu is actually a Chinese dish,
right?
That's like tofu, and you guys have probably had it without. It's like braised tofu is what it's called a lot of times at Chinese restaurant. I've heard some crazy ramen.
We'd never
in
heard
my
of
time,
it before,
but that is some crazy ramen,
and it's Chinese, so it does sort of go together.
But doesn't the tofu just kind of dissipate? And
I think they must have used like firm tofu, right? So it had like all of the Mapo tofu style components. Plus broth, plus then
what the fuck?
Ramen
this
noodles.
Is how you're opening the show?
Yeah, this is how we retain listeners.
Do you ever listen
not,
to
How did I not
foreplay?
Guess that? Why did I not guess that? Garnett's like, hey, he's like dropping hints. Like, I would ever guess in a million fucking years.
You guys talked about
ramen.
It on 8-4-play just the other day.
Mabadofu ramen?
Well, you talk about Mabadofu.
Oh.
Remember?
Oh, God. that's what... Okay. All right. I'm like, where the hell are you
going through
with
that
this?
Whole thing about Mabadofu.
That's true. We did it. We did explain what I just explained about what
exactly.
Mabadofu
See?
Is. Right. Okay.
And whether or not to use mixes or not.
Yes. That's true.
And on that side, I'd like to say that Ariel, though she's not here right now, does say that she thinks that mix actually is better than even bothering to make it yourself in the first place.
Well,
so that's a vote for
I
mix.
Will take that up with her.
That's a vote for mix.
I will take that up with her.
And on next week's episode of Yan Can Cook, we will be talking about...
Exactly.
Hey, we're just having a little fun.
I haven't played any games, so I can continue to talk about food for a while.
Food would be good.
If we want
to. We can
talk
about esoteric local food stuff. So I'm going to talk about blancmange.
Blancmange?
Blancmange.
I don't,
do you know what blancmange is?
I have no idea what blancmange is.
It is a milk-based gelatin pudding. What do you got, Jeff? From England. You got to do something from where you're from.
Where am I from?
Where are you from?
Have you heard of hamburgers?
Ah, yes. I love the hamburgers.
I got nothing.
Hey, so we've done GDC episodes before in the past, and we're recording a little early in the week anyway. However, just in general, the GDC thing sort of slows down a lot, and there's a ton of games to talk about as well. So I thought we'd just sort of have this used to be like the show used to be and just sort of hang out and, you know, talk about
stuff. If you haven't gathered that already, so, based on what we've talked about so far.
There is Mass Effect 3, which I guess
I'm
the...
How do we used to start these things?
What have you been eating?
What have you been eating?
That's right.
Well, I think actually there was a significant amount of drinking before we started.
We
still not open.
We get rolling on that. Well, we have to get cups, and you're actually the only person from the
that knows
facility.
Where the cups are.
Yes.
I can make a cup run at some
point.
So
you can do that for us. But we should jump in. Mark, you started off the day with some panels with Mario.
Yes.
And what did you learn? What did you get educated on?
So Mr. Hashida, who is from Nintendo's Tokyo development house, they made Mario 3D Land. They made Mario Galaxy. They made Donkey Konga, I think. They're one of the more recent Nintendo studios. But he gave a speech at GDC about making... Mario 3D Land, and it was really interesting how much thought I was surprised how much thought they give to the 3D depth and how it works and that sort of thing. Not maybe from how you would think, but more from a like human perception and how it works with 3D and stuff. I didn't think that anybody spent too much time worrying about...
You thought they just pressed the 3D button?
Well, yeah, kind of. Like, I mean, because you can turn it off, right? You can turn it off in the game. So I thought, okay, well, they have to design the game around a 2D game, and then maybe they just kind of juice it up at the end. Yeah. But
that's how they do most movies.
Right, exactly, right? And so it's kind of the difference between like your Avatar and your whatever, your crappy...
Clash of the Titans.
There you go. Where they just
throw
3D on at the end. But, you know, he had his presentation had like these interactive puzzles, really, even. It was like, okay, which block is closer? And it's because it depends on your perspective. And he talked about it kind of went all over the place. It was really wide ranging. He talked about the earthquake happening in Japan and kind of wondering, like, what are we doing making this, you know, video game when all this serious stuff is going on? And
wow.
Yeah,
that must have been a kind of a heavy feeling for the company working on something as light and wholesome and uplifting as Mario, especially that Mario game.
Exactly.
Like hopping around the clouds and
raccoon tails and whatever. But Christian Nutt, I talked to him after it, worked for Gamma Sutra, did a write up. He thought it was really like affecting actually, like his whole story about like, well, you know, we do this. A lot of Japanese developers said this too after the earthquake. Like, you realize we do it because, you know, it gives people enjoyment, and that's really important. Right. And also, it gave the team, you know, the team itself enjoys doing games. But it had a few things. Wow, thank you very much.
By the way, props to Amy for going and retrieving for us cups so we can enjoy this fine beverage.
Indeed. Thank you. Thanks very much. Thanks, Jeff, for this as well.
No problem.
But he talked about a couple of things that apply to all 3DS games about how they mess with the amount of depth that it looks like something can be into or out of the screen.
Right.
And they actually, because a lot of people will be like, oh, the 3D effect in this game was really good.
Yep.
Or it's not so much in this game. Well, they're actually, it's not like any one developer is better than the other. They're ratcheting it up or down depending on the type of game. So, like, for example, Mario 3D Land, they ratcheted it down because you might have a coin that is way out in your depth of field that looks like it's really close to you, but then it would be blocking a lot of what you were seeing, and you're making these fine platform jumps and stuff. So,
did you catch the episode? God, it was probably November-ish time frame last year. By the way, cheers.
For everyone. Cheers. Cheers. Out of paper cups.
Cheers. Indeed. Paper cups.
Classic.
But cheers.
Classic. Indeed.
Cheers.
Does everyone have one?
We all have one, yes. Bottoms up.
Everybody at home?
Ooh.
Go grab something.
Ooh, it smells good.
This is recommended by the lady who works there.
Oh my God, it's delicious.
Yeah. She says it's not too sweet.
No, it's fantastic.
No, it's great.
So the November episode of what?
This one we were talking about Starhawk. And I related a story that Dylan Cuthbert, who is the founder of Q Games down there in Kyoto, where they worked on Starhawk, talked about how...
But they worked on Starhawk?
Did they?
Star Fox.
Okay, sorry, I was like, say, what?
Starhawk is... Sorry, Starhawk is Lightbox, right?
Star Fox.
Yes. Star Fox. Wow, okay.
One sip.
I'm back with you.
Him.
Yeah, seriously.
Woo. I was all getting geared up for some Starhawk talk. I was getting all excited.
Where they worked on Star Fox, and he was and we had an interesting conversation because one of the things he's talked to me about, and I'm gonna hold my phone out so you can understand what I'm talking about, and then we can try to describe it to the audience that's listening. Is he talked about how if you're looking into the screen, there's different ways to handle the perspective as you're using 3D, and that it's important to remember that this portal, this rectangular portal through which you're looking, mm-hmm. is that sort of window pane,
yeah.
and not to try to expand the field of view beyond what natural...
there's convex and concave, yeah, 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 3D, yeah, 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 right? Exactly, and a lot of exactly. games are more successful, particularly on handhelds, they're more successful if they're concave.
Right.
Because you're looking into a box mm-hmm. as opposed to something.
Well, okay, so that's part
out.
Of it. But then also thinking that as your eyes, as you're looking down at this, thinking that you don't... If it's a broader width horizontally mm-hmm. than what you would be looking into it,
then it hurts.
It's going to be unnatural.
Yeah.
Mm. And so you have to think of this as a sort of viewer into the 3D world, which you can move around to get more perspective. But if you try and broaden beyond the natural width of what it would look like looking through it, then it's uncomfortable because it doesn't look right.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was one of the things they stuck to on Starhawks. And I think that's one of the things that Mario does as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, to bring this back, I'm not sure what I would have thought they did as far as 3D, because I don't think they would just push a button. But I know from playing that game that it is arguably the best implementation of 3D in a platform game. It all comes together really well.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even imagine. Like, I tried to play the game with 3D off, and it works,
yeah.
but it really loses something.
There's some levels that they showed that are like optical illusions that if you don't see them in 3D, this is going to be impossible to explain
yeah.
on radio. But people might know the levels that I'm talking about. They're like these really, they're like these kind of hidden away advanced levels, and they're almost like Escher paintings. Yeah. But if you have the 3D on, you can actually see, okay, this block, although it looks like it's just a continuation of this line of blocks, is actually really closer to the viewer. And they did do a lot of that kind of stuff. But one kind of larger question that it raised in my mind was like, wow, okay, these guys put all these work into this 3D stuff. But honestly, like, I don't know what you guys feel, but I feel like 3D in games compared to like where we were last year has been kind of like a non-starter. Like Sony was pushing it really hard. I mean, Nintendo obviously with the 3DS, but I feel like the 3D part of the 3DS, which was so exciting at that first E3, the glasses free 3D and stuff like that, is really an afterthought. A lot of people I know play with it off. It gives a lot of people headaches. I don't see a lot of people being like, oh man, the 3D in this game is so great. Yeah. I love that this game is...
Well, as you guys talked...
I would argue, though, that the reason for that isn't because it didn't catch fire. I would argue the reason for that is because they don't need to push it, because it's ubiquitous, because you can't buy a TV without 3D now. And it's sort of...
Do you think?
I think that's part of
it. A lot of the TV manufacturers seem to be backing off a little bit. I mean, LG is still going hard on it, but a lot of them are really easing off because... I think a lot of consumers are like, I don't like this.
To read the tech sites, it seems that smart TV is like their next gambit for how do we sell you a new television?
Did you see any TVs at CES that didn't have 3D as a function?
No.
They don't make them
but,
anymore.
I mean, they were there as a function, but they weren't there as a selling point anymore. You know, it used to be like,
but I think
oh my
that's
God,
like
the
same
the
thing with HD. It's like, oh my gosh, it's HD. And now that's just the baseline standard.
It can do it if you've got the...
And I kind of think that's my point, is that it doesn't need to be... It's not a bullet point anymore. It's just...
But it still
accepted.
Remains a thing of if you're selling a television to a family, then you still need multiple pairs of 3D glasses, which is a expense.
You know, people that bought, like, you know, big TVs and had to buy, like, six pairs of the goggles or whatever.
You must have a big family.
Now. No, not my family, but...
This is cheap. I mean, if you go passive, which I think looks great. But a lot of people.
But like Sony was pushing, you know, 3D.
All their PS2 updates.
In,
they were big about
games,
emphasizing that. Yeah.
You know, with Killzone and whatever. And they
but
were
then
showing
the wind,
them that.
But it's
way.
Sony. So then the wind changed direction and they decided to do something else.
Yeah. Well, do you see, I mean, Move, like, and Motion, all that, even at GDC, is kind of a afterthought also. It's so bizarre how quickly those things can come and go.
They should have jumped on that Johann Sebastian Joust. And
have you tried it?
Talk about selling some Move controllers.
It's
yeah.
so much fun.
It is fun. I mean, it doesn't really need the PS3. Literally,
no.
It doesn't need the PS3. But, I mean, you come up with a way that it uses it, you
that
know,
shit
hopefully
gets
in
violent.
Some novel fashion. You sell, like, you can sell a six move controller packs really easily for that game. Like, that. It's a funny game.
So did either of you go see the Folk Games talk that he gave? What was that, yesterday morning?
No.
No, I didn't see it, no.
I was wanting to see that, but I wasn't in until yesterday afternoon. Although there is some new stuff coming. We didn't really talk about it a lot last week. Have any of you seen Wrecketeer for Kinect?
No.
Which one is that?
So Wrecketeer is this really cool idea that basically takes the physics puzzle game of Angry Birds, of launching something and making a bunch of stuff knocked down, and makes it in 3D space with you running a ballista, and the Kinect part of it is that you...
A what?
A ballista, catapults. Whatever, one of those giant...
Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah, whatever those things are. And anyway, you load it with different shots, much like the birds would be in Angry Birds, right? Yeah. And then you fire it into 3D space, forward out into the landscape to bring down castles. The conceit for the game is that your company's been hired to wreck all of the castles in this kingdom.
Nice.
And so there's all these elaborate
it's
castles.
Blocks?
It's like Boom Blocks with Angry Birds. Done with Kinect, and you walk up to...
I feel like I just walked into the marketing meeting. It's like Angry Birds. That's the first... Okay, you got my attention.
Right. Right. Checkbox number one.
And Boom Blocks. Okay, my that marketing wasn't so good. Hard-on just went down. Absolutely nothing. Like, meow.
But then the Viagra kicked in because you played it, and it's really, really fun. And the thing
was this at the Microsoft thing?
Yeah, it was at the Microsoft thing.
Because there were a couple of Kinect things that were actually worth a damn there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So the Microsoft thing was weird because the top line stuff was really, you know, somnambulatory.
I thought Steel Battalion was cool. I thought Steel Battalion for Kinect was cool. The fact that you can beat the shit out of a guy for, like, trying to get out of the tank.
Oh, you really like that.
I just thought there was something kind of...
It's a little silly, though, John.
I know it was silly, but it felt like they'd actually applied some thought to this sense of space that exists outside of the game. You know the way the old Steel Battalion controller made you feel like you were, like, behind the controls of
yes.
it?
Yes.
I think the way they've applied Kinect to Steel Battalion is you... that. I mean, it's... there's a lot of metaphor there, but it's like you are inside this thing that you are controlling, and the whole sort of like moving and sort of grabbing things to pull yourself forward.
Who was there for GameSpot? I don't remember.
Giancarlo was there.
So did he played it?
Yeah.
So I don't know if he had the same experience I did, but one of the things that really stood out to me is it's apparent how much the amount of time and degree of effort that the developers put into working with Kinect is starting to pay off because that game controls really well with Kinect. Mm-hmm. That game has the fidelity, and you sit down and it does two tests. It does one, you know, where you sit down in front of it and put your arms out and it checks that space and orients you, and then does a standing one. And once you've done that, you actually feel quite comfortable and natural reaching out into the cockpit to mess with the controls and it works the way you expect
to. You guys still have your Kinect connected?
Yes. No.
No.
I couldn't even tell you what mine is.
Mine's sitting there, but I unplug it when I'm not using it because
you don't want it looking at you.
Exactly. I hate that because it shows you the little window of what you're doing. I'm like, oh,
and when
I'm,
it moves
I'm in
a little bit,
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah. Wait, stop it.
Big Brother's right there, man.
But then you can't say Xbox. Bing search. Right.
Yeah. Bing bong bing. Yeah.
The one thing I was surprised about Steel Battalion. I'm glad to hear that it works well, but like the setup. So like for people who don't know, is like you're in a tank basically,
and
like
it's a big tank.
That's a VT,
right?
And
vertical tank.
And there's a bunch of guys in there with you.
That's right. You have your gunner on your right, your gunner to the left, your navigator guy. If it sounds like I know a lot about this game, I kind of do. But they're like,
why is that, Mark?
Oh, I don't know. I'm a big Steel Battalion fan. there's a lot of like controls in front of you, and like when upon hearing that, I mean, very fine. Like you go over here, and here's like your windshield wipers. You go over here. Yep. There's like a hatch. You're doing everything manually, but like it's basically
really have windshield wipers.
Yes,
I think it does.
There's a lot of cool elements. So there's actually a lot
That's
of cool.
That's not what I would put on the cool list. Dude, there's a lot of cool stuff.
Windshield wipers. First.
If you like that,
it beeps when you go backwards. Yeah. Like
there's a trunk pop. It's amazing.
Got rearview mirror dice,
seat warmers,
fuzzy dice.
Cool. But like, I was kind of upon hearing this, like, is this going to work with Kinect? Where I, you know, even if I stand up, I wonder if it's even going to detect that. But because there's a lot of fine motion detection, where it's like, no, I'm not grabbing this lever. You know, at 2 o'clock, I'm trying to push the button just a couple inches.
I didn't have any trouble
right
with that.
That's awesome. I'm very glad to hear
that.
And I was
surprised because of that exact same thing. Like when you reach out for the throttle, which is right next to two other buttons that do other things.
But there's no ghost hand indicating where your hand is.
No, but it does. So it does cast a highlight over what you're putting it on. And what I found, it was really natural. Like I put my hand out. Oh, that's right where I wanted it to be. Boom, connect it. Yeah, exactly. It worked the way it was supposed to.
That's cool.
And I liked that. And then what I was saying about the cool stuff is that it does have features such as, okay, so you're looking out into the world through a windscreen most of the time, but you can also close the blast doors over the windscreen and reach up and pull down this video camera feed that shows you a front or rear or a side camera view. So you could be, particularly potentially in a hardened situation where you have to like buckle up and get, completely locked down.
Right.
Or vice versa. If you're out in the desert, as you are maybe later on in the game, open it up, have to like keep people cool. There's a lot of cool interactivity there. I think there's a lot of interesting stuff. I'm not sure though, John, that I like the idea of having to like slap and punch people.
Have you ever bro-fisted on the Kinect, Garnet? This is boom. New gameplay experiences.
I just like the idea that you were inside, that it did a good job of conveying that you were inside this large
thing
with other characters. And that the game behaves in a way that it knows.
Right.
The way that it knows you fucked up is that it makes all the people that you're in there with paranoid about the fact that you fucked up. Like if you die and have to restart, all of your staff are then that they trust you less and they try and get out.
That's crazy.
So if you're like,
game over, man.
Yeah, there's a bit of that to it, but you don't see it if you're sort of cruising through it. And you're doing well, you don't see that. But if you start messing up,
well,
the team starts to kind of revolt against the captain a little bit.
And there's some additional RPG light sort of binary domain like things there as well of how do you interact with those team members.
Tully's coffee in there?
Yes, anyway, so there are ways to interact with the rest of your squad mates so that they continue to be engaged, and you have to lead them. There's a leadership element that you're trying to keep in there. And then, of course, if you lose people, I mean, the big thing they've made is, and I don't know how much I like this idea, is that, you have your loader to the right of you, and if your loader dies, then you're going to have to reach over and start loading shells into this thing. I'm like, not sure that's really good. I mean, is anyone actually going to let the loader die and not just go, okay, well, I'm going to hit restart?
It's real, Garnett.
It's real.
It's the same thing with the old Steel Battalion thing. Well, that was a little bit extreme, where if you died, you just erased your save game. Did they actually say? Does it?
It does not erase your save game.
It's not that same way. Okay.
But you still have the eject, and it's kind of fun to do because you reach up and punch the screen, and it has like a little glass, like in case of emergency,
smash this,
and so you smash the glass over the button, and then you punch the button. And
what's the point of ejecting though? Like
resetting and restarting.
Can't you just stop and restart? Or?
You could, but that's the way you do it.
Boring. Yeah.
It's kind of,
But
you're kind of into it. Come on, man. You were the one who wanted to bro fist. You got to bro fist the VT.
One thing I saw in the video was you get out of the tank sometimes.
Yes.
Through the hatch. Can you do that at any point in the game?
No, it seems to be contextual. And like you get out and scavenge, and there's things that you might. So then that brings in sort of the character development and character relationship pieces. There are things you might scavenge and then start to have, so and so likes this or so and so likes that. And
found an apple.
Maybe.
Terry likes apples. Give Terry all the apples.
So that's Steel Battalion. Back to Wrecketeer, which was the ballista game.
Okay,
where
about this. Are you actually like pretending to grab something and then backing up off
of the That's exactly it.
Pumpkin launcher?
It's like a pumpkin. Oh, it's exactly like a pumpkin launcher. That's exactly what
it is. Can you sit and play this game, or do you have to
sit
stand?
And play this game. No,
okay, that'll be fun for about 30 seconds.
Oh, dude, no, it's really fun.
It was, for 30 seconds, and then you sit down, and the next person at the party.
I don't know.
Seth and I
played it for about 20 minutes and had a really freaking good time.
Really?
With it. Yeah, we had a really fucking good time.
Didn't exactly say 20 minutes, and then you said we played it for 20 minutes. We had a really good time. You said that'd be really fun for 20 minutes. And you go, Seth,
20 seconds, I think. But
I want to play more.
I'm surprised.
I was
ready
to play more because here's the thing: is that they've continued the what. What?
No, it sounds awesome. Keep going.
I feel like I'm digging my own grave suddenly.
No,
not at all.
No, I think it was my mistake because I thought he said, that'd be fun for about 20 minutes. You said, Seth and I played it for like 20 minutes and it was great.
But Mark was being far more facetious.
So it has a virtual representation of a pie-shaped grid or pie-shaped wedge on the ground in the game space. That's where you walk up and grab the shot for the ballista. And there's different shots of which, there's like one that you can trigger and explodes, like the – is that the red bird?
They should have bought the Warlords license from Atari and made this Warlords 3D.
Oh my god, that would be amazing.
Bam, there you go.
That would be amazing.
Free money.
Welcome.
That one's free.
I'm in. So you walk up and you grab the shot, you step your back, and then you swivel your body side to side and up and down to aim this thing, and you let go of it, and then it launches the thing. Now, once you've launched it, you don't just sit there and passively watch it. You have these two virtual gauntlets on the screen that you can then use to put English on your shot.
Ah. So there's virtual gauntlets creating English. Amazing.
Another one of those games.
I'm not being facetious. Keep going. Yeah,
but no, you're not being facetious. No. You're hiding it so well.
Virtual gauntlets just struck me as like, go.
The touch
it sounds thrilling. Keep going.
All of you out there who wanted the old show, you've got it. This is exactly what it was like.
So exciting. Let me take my pants off.
Wait, what makes you think that they're not already on?
Tell me again about the virtual English. Go.
So you put your hands.
It's English, isn't it? It's not something that English people use.
What do you call it? And when you play snooker and you
snooker.
No, but you hit the ball and you
snooker.
Whatever. When you play that game with the not as many pool balls.
We put American on stuff.
Okay.
So you just hit it as hard as you can in one direction.
Scream at it.
Just put spin
make
on it.
Go. That's what it is. Just spin on it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Spin on it.
So anyway, in Racketeer, you put your hands out and you're able to, and it really, this is the part that actually made the game transform from something that, oh, this is just a gimme that I've done before, to something that's different, which was that you have a great sense of putting cool English. It's not over exaggerated, but yet it has a good sensitivity to it of, I wanted to put a little bit of touch on it, so I got a little touch, or I wanted to put a lot of touch on it, I got a lot of touch. That was really fun playing with
the
shot.
So you just like move the hand slightly. You don't go like, this was like it was a trackball or something.
Either way,
get it going.
Either way, if you launch a shot and it's not going at all where you want to, you can put big sweeping motions into it and really change the trajectory. If you want to just have a little, like, you just want to get a little tweak to hit something that's.
Are we still talking about
it? Yeah, I was going to say, watch out, Call of Duty.
God damn it, this shit is fun. Screw you guys. There's also one there's also a shot you can fly. There's a shot you can put your hands out, wings out, and fly it.
I'm sure it is fun, but this is like with a lot of Kinect games. I think we've talked about it for longer than it would actually be fun to play. Like,
I think
you're wrong. Like, it'd be fun to play for like 5 minutes.
You just live in too small an apartment.
I do.
You live in too small of an apartment.
I don't own a Kinect.
He has to go two doors down the street to play Kinect.
That's right.
In his own living room.
So one day when I don't have too small of an apartment on the beach at Santa Monica and have my Kinect set up all the time, you can come to America. We will play this and you'll be like, wow, this game's really fun. I was wrong.
And give it English.
Right.
Or American.
What else was at the... Is this the...
Was there anything interesting
Microsoft,
in this thing?
Is this the Microsoft event that was last week?
I heard there's some Halos.
There was some Halo
hanging around there.
Stuff.
All right. I'll tell you what.
Let's talk about that.
Let's do this. Let's regroup.
Let's
regroup. Refresh our drinks. We'll take a little break. When we come back on the other side, we can decide during the break what we're going to regroup and discuss in the second segment that we have marked for.
I think we should talk about tofu. Or moga tofu or whatever the hell it
is. Mabudofu. Okay. Yeah. Mabudofu. Or as JJ said, ma-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da. We Can Confirmed. We'll be right back. We Can Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from shacknews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from We Can Confirmed in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games. And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices. All right, we are bringing it back.
Why is your app available for Palm?
That's an excellent question,
also
John Davison. I have no idea.
Store.
It is
Gizmodo and the Gizmondo.
Look, Che is not here. It is not available for the Gizmondo.
It is now available for Neo Geo Pocket Color.
Do you remember him and getting? I'm going to get that because he was going to do in car navigation with that thing. He's like, it's amazing. You can do in car navigation with this Gizmodo. Do you not remember that?
I found one in a cupboard the other day.
Really?
Yeah.
A Gizmodo?
With a skull and crossbones.
No, Gizmodo's the website, right? There. It's Gizmondo.
Gizmondo, whatever.
One of those things, I don't know.
They both wreck Ferraris, I'm sure.
Ooh. Too soon.
Too soon?
I'm joking.
That is not too soon. Hey, we were just talking in the break between the show of like what to talk about next. And one of the things Mark brought up is he wants to know about Halos.
Yeah. I saw the, all I know is I saw the, I haven't had much chance to like read all of the coverage, but I did see the video that they put out. I did see the internet like going nut, like really like the graphics, what they showed of it, which was mostly, I mean, just comparison of models and like Master Chief standing around, and they showed like a little bit of like long shot multiplayer, but not really a whole lot of like gameplay or single player gameplay. But so did they show you guys? So yeah, I just want to hear basically any.
They showed us nothing else.
Oh, okay.
That was what they showed us. And by the way, Frank,
good talk.
Yeah, so cool. And
Frank is now extremely well media trained.
Frank O'Connor?
Yeah. Frankie's like super well media trained because he dodged questions better than a Republican candidate for president. I mean, it was like
what questions?
So the one I was curious about was how much they're considering professional gaming leagues for their design and their multiplayer, because, you know, Reach has very quickly fallen off of the circuit.
Yeah,
it's not what people want to play.
Playing Gears of War 3 instead now, which is weird because they all hated Gears of War 2.
They were down on it.
3 is came along so well that the pros are playing that now.
Hmm. And so I was curious, you know, if that's something that they're going to reach out to that community and get engaged with them as far as, hey, what do you guys want? What will make this a great game for multiplayer? And the answer very quickly steered right back to, so we're going to tell the story about why Red and Blue are fighting each other.
But they didn't give any more hint about it. They mentioned that in the vid doc.
All the stuff too. They mentioned in the vid doc. So I think that, you know, what we can talk about is what's in the vid doc. And the thing to me that's scary for them, and I told, you know, our old friend David Ellis is working at 343.
Yeah, yeah.
He's now a multiplayer designer.
That's right.
That's pretty awesome, by the way. Props to David Ellis for putting in a lot of hard work and being successful. Congrats, Dave.
That dude is already paid his dues. Yeah, totally. Oh, for sure. Totally. So
for sure.
That makes me feel better. I mean, there's a lot of people that we know that's now working there at 343. Yeah. You mentioned Frank already, but
my old friend Kynan Pearson, exactly. Who was at Retro, is now there. Worked on Donkey. Did he?
I thought he worked on Metroid Prime.
He worked on Metroid Prime and then did Kong.
Yeah, Kong Returns.
Yeah. Donkey Kong Returns.
Yeah, yeah.
And then moved up there. And now, as a matter of fact, one of the multiplayer maps that they showed was one he's been working hard on.
He's like the multiplayer guy, right?
Yeah.
And David's now like in his group. Anyway, I'm
so
just saying.
So here's the thing that worries me for them.
Yeah.
Is that I felt like Bungie had told a lot of Halo's story, and they had been very specific about what they did in the game. They did Halo 1, 2, and 3. They did ODST. They wrapped it up with Reach, and they were, you know, they were.
Well, they didn't really wrap it up with Reach.
They wrapped up their involvement with the franchise.
Involvement, not story wise.
No, not story wise. Yeah, okay. But they wrapped up their involvement with that era of Master Chief, which really wasn't even Master Chief in Reach. I mean, I know a lot of people were upset about that, but be that as it may, they did great first person engine, a certain sort of you instantaneously knew that's a Bungie Halo game. And I thought to myself, with 343 coming into this, that here's a great chance for them to make a game that's really rich in Halo, as far as Halo, like all the things it brings to the table canonically and experience wise, but you got to make something that's yours.
Right.
And instead.
So they have to make something that's theirs, but also at the same time. I mean, that's what the whole theme of that vid doc is like. We have to keep it and still be it, but it has to be new and different enough at the same time.
The theme of that vid talk, I think to me, the theme of the vid doc, the message I walked away from that presentation with was, remember Halo 3? Mm-hmm. We're going to make a bigger, badder-asser Halo than Bungie ever did.
And that is a way of making it yours. You know, you can look at it as a way of saying, we're going to own the thing that they used to own. We're going to make it ours.
Hey, God bless them if they can do it, but
what sort of
that's pretty ballsy.
Well,
it's pretty ballsy,
and it's to their credit to be ballsy.
It's setting them up to be consistently compared across every moment.
They're
going to
be compared anyway.
How do you not?
There's no way out of that.
If it's a departure, then you're fucking yourself a different way.
You're fucking yourself a different way.
The thing I found interesting about that vid doc was, if you look back at the Bungie ones, and I've always really enjoyed them, but what they would do with each new game is be like, just throw the last game under the bus. They would be like, man, God, Halo 2, remember that piece of shit? Like, I mean, they were super candid about it, and it was great, but they would be like, God, Mike, we really, like, to a surprising degree, like, that thing was like, oh, that was awful.
They were kind of right about Halo 2, though.
I mean,
but like,
The Audrey was awesome.
But seriously, they would be honest about where they screwed things up. And they would do that in introducing how in this new game they've improved on it, or they fixed that, or they addressed that, or whatever. 343, I think, is in a weird spot where they cannot be like, yeah, that thing kind of sucked that Bungie did, but we're going to go and do this. So they have to, you know, they can't really say it, so they'll just show models instead
what
of.
What do you mean,
like,
they can't say it? They went out of their way to say, we're not reusing any single player assets in our multiplayer maps.
Right, but that's just them saying, well, you think that's a dig at saying that,
is it not a dig? It sounded like one to me.
Yeah, well, maybe.
I think that's all about owning it. It's we're not using stuff that we didn't make. This is our game.
Well, they would have made their single player levels. I think what they're saying is we're badass and we're going to make our own.
No, I think they're saying, like, if you're expecting us to just like take whatever Bungie left over and gave us and we're just going to like put a new coat of paint on it or whatever, we're actually like working our asses off or whatever and blah blah blah. It's a tightrope walk. It is a tightrope walk,
and I understand that if you're, especially within the halls of Microsoft, that trying to sell this thing as anything other than Halo 4, which is a bigger, badder ass, or Halo 3, would be a real uphill battle. I worry for them about setting themselves up for exact. And they went ahead and did it. They said, "Here's the model for Halo, for Master Chief in Halo 3. Here's the model in Halo 4." I mean, that one to one comparison stuff.
They've done that all the time. They do that with every game.
If you're Bungie building on Bungie, that's one thing. But if you're 343 going against Bungie, that introduces this whole loyalty and nostalgia element to, like, oh, Bungie was always better.
That's how it's going to be. Like, that's the 800-pound gorilla in the room.
It is. I agree.
You know, that's...
And so to me, I guess to my sensibility, if they had approached it...
I mixed metaphors there.
There's an 800-pound gorilla in the room.
That's right.
Yeah.
Is he next to the elephant?
Hanging out with the elephant.
Hey, poke shit in the woods. I just think that maybe there was some way for them to separate themselves a little bit and gain some. We love what Bungie did and respect and honor that.
Right.
And we're going to do something that's reverential of that, but also our own thing as 343.
Well, I took that as what they were saying. But yeah,
hope so.
Well, so what? I guess they're holding stuff back for E3. Then yeah. Did they say what the next big reveal is? Multiplayer or whatever? Okay.
I think that they'll probably stay pretty tight-lipped about it. Obviously, they don't want to blow. You know, the big thing here is that the single-player campaign is an entirely new enemy, ancient evil. One of the things that Frank did talk about in the session I was in was how you got to know the Covenant, and so you felt like you had an understanding by 3, and especially by Reach, of, you know, who these aliens were, what they were about, the religious fanaticism, and the setup of the Halo rings. And in this game, in Halo 4, there's going to be an entire sense of unknown quantity to the ancient aliens.
Isn't it a throwback to the whatever they were called? The
forerunners?
The Forerunners? I would suspect so.
The Range Rovers?
I would suspect so. They've hinted at that, but in the end, it's ultimately an unknown.
The Range Rovers?
The Range Rovers. Yeah. Yeah.
Forerunners. The RAV4s.
Yeah, I think that's what they are.
I think it's a pre-runner. Pre-runner.
But so you didn't see anything? They just like showed you the video?
They just showed us the video. The video, and then they talked. Yeah, they talked a little bit about how enthusiastic they are about working on the game. And obviously, one of the things that I think this is definitely a feather in the cap is what a great team they put together. I mean, they've put together a pretty phenomenal team of internationally known superstar game developers to work on this thing. I mean,
in fine games industry tradition these days, they refuse to let anyone say anything interesting.
That's kind of true. Yeah.
It's like, let's round up a bunch of great people and then not let them like talk or communicate about what they're doing or convey their enthusiasm in any way whatsoever.
It's a shame. And I think that's because they're so nervous about something getting misinterpreted or misread or misrepresented and then not being able to dig back out of it.
So what did you think about how the game looked?
It looked like pretty Halo, and I'm not sure that
isn't
that's
that
necessarily
what people
enough.
Want?
Yeah,
it's not necessarily,
but it's not
bad.
But it's pretty, not pretty it's Halo. Not Frostbite too
no.
pretty.
And what John and I were talking about today at lunch is: do people come for the single player game anymore?
No. I do.
Yeah, they do. Yeah,
this guy with the thumbs. Yeah,
they definitely.
So
do.
John says no. Mark
I,
says.
I mean,
definitely.
I mean, just I think there's an element that comes, but they stay for the multiplayer.
They do stay for the multiplayer, and multiplayer is a huge part of it. But I don't know the numbers, but it's some statistic where It's crazy, but some I would probably maybe say the majority, some large number of Halo players never even play the multiplayer, like, period, once, ever.
Isn't there probably also a group that never plays the single player?
No, there is, of course.
And I bet that group is much bigger.
You think that group is bigger?
I think the people that only play multiplayer is way bigger than us old farts that only play the single player.
I don't think so. I think, I mean, Microsoft, this can definitely be proven right or wrong. Yeah.
There are some stats on a server that they'll never give out that prove this.
But I'm pretty sure it's the other way around. But the,
Wouldn't you love to see that telemetry?
Yeah. The positioning, at least of this early announcement, certainly supports Mark's position, which is, hey, the multiplayer will tie into the single player, guys. You know, that certainly seems to be the positioning of the product is, look, story matters. Story all the way. Story, you know, is number one. You come for the story, you stay for the competitive stuff.
You come for the story, you stay for the competitive stuff.
Doesn't that seem to be what kind of the messaging in the sense of, hey, multiplayer is going to tie into the story now, so it's not like you're fighting for no reason, if that's what you're worried about, audience. You know? I don't know. I'm just supposing, but...
Did they mention Forge at all? They didn't, did they?
They did not mention Forge. No. I would think that with the radical amount of upgrades they're putting in the technology, because interestingly, it does seem that at this point they are using the core Bungie tech for this game, because they talked a lot about Billy's over there. Billy Berghammer, Plan B, who's going to be on here in a minute, is back there nodding his head left to right as if no. However, they were...
That's not a nod.
They were he was
he's nodding his head left to right.
He's shaking his head left to right. That or he's having a convulsion.
It's red breast is good stuff. Be,
he could be convulsing.
He's shaking his head in agreement.
I'm just saying that they couched a lot of their discussion in upgrade, not new engine, not here's our tech, but upgrade. Mm. So just the implication was that they're building on top of something that's existent.
Yeah, well, yeah. I have to say, like, I thought, and the reaction on the internet was pretty, I mean, there were animated GIFs of people freaking out about what the graphics look like, mm-hmm. where I've seen previous Halo debuts, I think it was 3 or whatever, which I think looked like a good game at its time, you know, especially, but it wasn't.
No one was falling over themselves to say how gorgeous it looked.
Right, exactly. People were like, oh yeah, you know.
I thought they were building on the engine that they'd built for the Combat Evolved reboot. I thought that was the foundation.
Oh, who knows?
We're all talking out of our ass.
We are talking out of our ass on that one.
So what else do they have besides Halo at this, in the catapult, whatever, Ballista game?
Why do you want to Halo?
Forza Horizons.
Oh, wait. Yeah, what about all the crappy cash-ins on, what's it called? Peter Molyneux.
Fable Journey.
Who is no longer a member of Lionhead.
That's right.
Speaking left in shame. I mean, to go do something else.
He's a Microsoft executive now.
Doing mobile games, right?
Something like that, yeah. Fable Journeys, the game that you just sort of sit there.
Yeah.
On a horse and cart.
So
I'm you know what, can I just excuse myself?
They are still making it, apparently.
Okay. And they're also making like some Mario Party piece of shit game that like they slapped the Fable license on, apparently. Like, looks like Play School toys and it somehow has Fable's name on it.
Yeah.
What's that?
Many moons ago,
Fable Heroes.
I got to be friends with Peter, and sometimes it pains me. Sometimes it really pains me because Peter is a very imaginative guy. He's a great figure in game design, and a lot of that stems from the fact that he gets on his flights of fancy that he gets excited about. And I'll just say this: ask him now about Milo, and you can just see in his facial response how
he sounds like you're talking like you're Peter Molyneux.
How
like,
frustrating and disappointing.
About Milo. You can see in his facial response. I can't do an accent. I'm sorry, John. You'll have to take this over. But you can see in his facial response the reaction that he will have.
I'm not going to. Emotions. I can't throw him personally under the bus, but Journey I can throw under the bus right now because it's not there. It's just not there. I've demoed this game a couple of times and you know, unfortunately, because we're sort of friends, you know, when I got into that session, he asked me to demo it, and you know, I stepped up and
he asked you to demo it. Really?
Well, someone was going to demo it from the audience, so I was the guinea pig.
Oh, right.
And you know,
did you have to do anything? You just sit there, right?
Well, and you hold the reins to your horsey. And you
sat there and with your arms.
And you pull back on the right one to turn right and pull back on the left one to turn left.
Oh, it's so much lamer than putting English on it with your virtual gauntlets.
I was just about to say.
Oh, you just pull on your horsey. Like, not cool stuff like virtual gauntlet English.
Maybe can't these two games work together? Like, you ride your horse
if you
over
could
to
fire
the other
things off the back of
fuck
the horse
all
thing.
You guys.
Just saying it's a little inconsistent. That's all
what
I'm saying.
What do you mean it's a little inconsistent? So all rolling, rolling with Racketeer, rolling.
Don't make him start talking about it.
Damn it!
But don't you cast spell?
All that rolling was fun. Horse riding, not so much.
Don't you cast spells?
I'm not a 14-year-old girl, okay?
Don't you cast spell? Right. Whoa! Yeah.
Really?
Don't you cast spells and like shoot arrows and crap or something?
Yeah, casting spells.
You know, you're hearkening back to the E3 demo of. Yeah. Was that 2 years ago?
No, it was last year.
Where you got out, and you were like throwing spells and stuff. And you still throw spells. And actually, the thing now that they've added is that your right hand is your spell casting hand. So it'll be like fire, ice, lightning, that sort of thing. And your left hand has a. There's a dancing game now. Your left hand has a magical whip.
A what?
A magical whip.
Of course it does.
Yeah. Of course.
And so you can like you know. You can, like, it's like a Hydra whip, too, with multiple whip heads and
cat-o'-nine-tails.
Yeah, it's kind of.
So what do you do with that? You grab items?
You can grab items, and you can use it to attack enemies, but you can also use it to, like, grab enemies and pull them towards you or throw them up in the air.
I like
combo them.
Fable Bulletstorm.
Yeah, it's sort of that.
You say this with such dread in your voice, but you already went through the you sit with horse reins. Like, this sounds like the best part of this shitty game.
Well, exactly.
I mean, no. I mean, it,
which is not
it looked
much
shitty
solace,
last time I saw it, I should say. Does it still look shitty?
How shitty is it?
I mean, just we're talking about the cat details.
God.
Like, it still looks shitty. Like, E3, it looked like a piece of crap.
It doesn't look.
Peter Mallet, your buddy, doesn't work there anymore.
It doesn't look good. It doesn't look good. And I, you know, the whole thing. So, one of the things that they want to introduce now is that you have this you have a relationship with your horse.
Yeah, let's talk about other games.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff happening at GDC we could talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there was Trials Evolution. So me and Brad from Giant Bomb played Trials Evo 4-player with 2 other folks, and it was awesome. If you like Trials Evo.
That game is ridiculously popular.
It's fucking so good.
Easy numbers.
It's so good. And 4-player multiplayer is so fun.
Yeah.
Because it's simple. It's Excitebike in 3D with awesome physics.
So is it not really changing the formula? It's just like 4-player now?
4 players at the same time.
Yeah.
And it has a point system where you get penalized points. So basically the races are all match races, you know, so like 3 to 5 races where – I think actually you can go higher than 5, but we did 3 to 5 races where you're building up points on a circuit basis. So, you know, winner gets 10 points, second place gets 6, something like that. And then you lose points based off of wrecking and falling behind too far. So that's how that's their balance system. So there's a constant impetus to keep pushing forward and moving faster. But of course, if you play Trials, the harder you push, the harder you try to make yourself go forward, the harder it is to keep up with the physics of the motorcycle and not flip over forward or flip over backwards.
No rubber banding or any kind of that stuff to keep the
race.
So
rubber banding
close.
Is that if you fall too far behind, then you fall off the back of the race and it waits till the next checkpoint to bring you back in and you get penalized on your final point score.
Well, no, but I mean, rubber banding, it doesn't, like, suddenly, if you're way far out in the lead, you slow down.
Oh, no, it isn't a ridge racer. No, it doesn't ridge racer you, no. Okay. No ridge racering. If you get too far ahead of the pack, like, that is a strategy. You can push forward hard enough that if you get far enough forward, you drop the people off the back, and you're racing by yourself, and they're going to take penalty points.
Okay.
It's fun. Like, if you play Trials, that's all you need to know. It's fantastic.
Cool. What else? What else?
It was really awesome. What else was there? Porsches and Forza?
About time.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. I wonder why it took so long for EA to come around. So the explanation was, well, we were going to get it done, but by the time we were ready to make the deal, it wasn't going to get in the final shipping version. I don't know. Anyway.
And Porsche had a whole bunch of new cars coming out, so it made
20
sense.
Bucks,
and,
yeah. 20 bucks, 30 Porsches, 5 new events.
Yeah.
They're going to have...
Wait, 20 bucks?
Yeah, $19.99. And not included in their season pass thing. So does that chap your hide if you're a Forza fan? Because I feel like you got what you paid for. But I was talking to a couple people about this, and they're like, wait, I paid for Season Pass. I should get this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I feel like Season Pass, although it says Season Pass, we all know it's not Season Pass. It's buy 4, get 1 free sort of thing.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Or do we not know that? Is that not a fair assessment?
No, I mean, I don't know much about this stuff at all. This is DLC?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's DLC. Porsches were not in Forza.
Right.
You can only play roofs. And they're going to add 30 Porsches to the game. I'm going to presume...
It's $20 DLC for 30 Porsches.
And some tracks.
And some tracks.
Okay.
Yeah.
How many tracks?
Five
tracks, 10 events.
Yeah.
And 30 Porsches.
But this doesn't... I mean, you guys are racing game guys. Yeah. This jibes with your...
I mean, it's a lot of update.
It's a lot. It's huge for me to get Porsche in the game. $20 for a badge is pretty pricey.
Yeah.
It's pretty pricey.
And if you can wait, I bet 3 to 6 months from now, there's a Forza 4 Mega
Super Edition
pack for...
Right.
Well, of course.
Or whatever.
But I mean, that's the nature of the beast with video games in general. If you buy a release day, you pay the premium. If not, you take advantage of sales. I don't know. Tough question. And then they showed Forza Horizon. Well, it exists. It's real.
Didn't really show it.
No, that's it. Forza Horizon. It's real.
The words Forza Horizon were
shown. Who's making that? Is it?
So this is all the guys. Yeah, it's kind of
not turn.
It's a cool new team formed in England of guys who worked at Cody's, and also guys who worked on Blur, and it's kind of all the guys who went out of business from Bazaar the other team, John, you're British, of course you know the English guys.
I know what you mean. Yeah. I can't name them, but
don't worry, no one cares. Yeah.
So Metropolis Street Racer background, Blur background, Dirt background, all these guys all coming together in this one studio.
And this is a new studio.
New studio,
new game, Forza brand.
Wow.
And it looks like it's going to be open roads as opposed to circuits.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's really all we know. Yeah. And it'll have girls and wub wub dubstep.
Of course.
Everything has
wub
wub dubstep.
Yeah, exactly. So what's turn?
Is that some sort of tofu that I'm supposed to know about?
Yes.
Wubba dofu dubstep tofu.
Wubba dofu.
what's turn 10 doing now then?
They're doing another Forza, right?
I would guess Forza for the next console, right?
Yeah.
Don't you think it's probably that'd be a no brainer for a launch game?
Yeah.
Would make sense
to
me.
It would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it would make a ton of sense.
Yeah.
And that would put them back on their 2-year schedule.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Hmm.
Which is
interesting.
Speculation.
Ooh. Anything else exciting at Microsoft Fun Day?
At the Microsoft Fun Day, Quantum Conundrum, which I also talked to Kim Swift about today, is looking really good.
Yeah, so I really want to hear about that game, because this game, I expected a lot of Portal clones after Portal came out. I want a lot of Portal clones because there's not enough interesting.
But this isn't a Portal clone,
right? No, of course it's not. You were talking to Kim Smith. It's not a Portal clone at all. But so what is,
you know what the opposite of above you is? No, it's
not
really
like Portal at all.
Okay, so is every puzzle game that takes place in 3D space going to be a Portal clone then?
Made by the people who made Portal, and
it's
with
about rooms
like
rooms where you have test chambers and you have to get from one room to the next.
With
look,
like
they're not
a
test chambers.
Giant
it's your,
person.
It's your uncle's
the entire
mansion.
Plot. Yes,
it's your uncle's mansion. Okay. This is Disney-fied.
Wait, this is a thing that was shown like
last year
at PAX.
It last year? It feels
don't
like
you remember?
Last year.
It was at the hotel.
It was like 2 years ago, right?
You went and saw it. Was in your hotel, right?
I have an appointment to see it tomorrow. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm excited to.
Don't get hung up on the Portal clone. I just mean that
you
genre.
Mean that in a good way.
I just mean that genre of that some style.
I'm just giving you shit. You're right.
3D spatial reasoning.
So actually, it's
a
things,
good thing. I want more games like that.
It was one of the things
excited.
That we talked about in our interview, and one of the things that Kim talked about was how working in 3D space is just a delivery method that they still conceptualize all of the puzzles that they do in 2D, and they just whiteboard them, and they come up with all these ideas in whiteboard,
right?
And they're all 2D.
So how does it work? What is the game?
Okay, so the game is that the story premise is real simple. It's that you come to your uncle's house, you've been dropped on his doorstep, you go in, you find out he's missing, and it walks you through the tutorial, which is explaining that he has these. You have this gun attachment that allows you to manipulate.
Sorry, the portal clone thing. Like everything you've said up until now is just going in my head. Yeah, but go ahead. This gun. Yeah,
it allows you to open portals. One is one's an orange one, one's a blue one. No, the difference is that this is very elemental based. So you're able to change physical properties. So the first thing that they show you is Fluffy World. You get a battery. Well, first, actually, they just show you Fluffy World and let you play around with it. And then eventually you get a battery you can insert into the into the, I forget what the name of it is, but the temporal shifting machine. And when you put the Fluffy World battery in, then you have the ability to trigger Fluffy World, which makes everything soft and lightweight.
Uh-huh.
Fluffy.
So there's like,
have you met my little cat Fluffy?
So you have
a marshmallow in your mouth and say it again.
A gun or device of some kind that's changing the properties of the whole of
no, there's
all,
no
all
gun
parts of the level?
Except for this thing that
some device or whatever it is. I'm not. Trust me, I'm not doing the portal clone thing anymore. I just want to know
just
now.
It's on its own now.
So, yes, you have a device, and it's very much set up. You're correct. It's set up in a series of rooms that are basically test chambers, and each of them has a logic puzzle that you have to solve. And one of the things I think it's really interesting that both Portal and this game evidence, and my comparison here is to Braid, which we talked about Braid some recently because it came up in context of, you know, Jonathan Blow, who created Braid, had this big hang up with people doing FAQs for it because he didn't want to spoil the learning experience, and that's the aha moment of the game.
Anybody read a Braid FAQ? I hope they look at the YouTube video
because that's exactly what we were talking about.
Okay, yeah.
Because he harangued people about that, right? But my problem with Braid was that as I got progressively further in the game, the puzzles got more difficult, but I didn't feel like I had been let in on the secret.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I got
the
into space.
Aha moment. You didn't feel like you were having it. You felt like you were just brute forcing it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. I've heard that from a lot of people.
And the challenge I have here, and it was what I was talking with Kim about, it's like you don't want to say, hey, Mark, the way you're going to solve this next room is you're going to take a block and you're going to put it over here and you're going to press this switch. And when you press this switch, this is going to happen to the block. And then after that, you're going to jump over this thing. And the reason you can jump over the thing is because when you switch the switch, the block did that. You don't want to know that much detail. What you need to know is that, oh, if I was to switch that switch, then the block would do this thing, yep, and that would solve this puzzle for me. And it's a really – it's a subtle nuance.
Yeah.
But that seems to be what these guys get. And so this time they seem to be working in a more elemental sort of way of heavy, light, lightning, earth, water, fire, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But the same ideas as – oh, I take a block and I throw it, and while it's in the midair, I switch it in physical state. And because I switched it in physical state, now it can do something to affect the world. And because I affected the world, now I can advance through this puzzle.
Okay. So I think that what you're talking about, they talk about in the Portal 2 commentary bubbles, they talk about like the aha moment and how hard it is to actually design rooms, which you can imagine to not make it too easy and not make it too hard for a wide variety of people is a huge pain in the ass, like really, really hard to do. But I mean,
and that's the elegance of Portal,
right? And she has experience doing that within Valve.
But
I'm still kind of trying to get an idea for this game and how it works. So like, is there an example puzzle you can give like that shows like
sure,
what does Fluffy World mean?
So let me take you through the demo
know.
At the beginning a little bit. So you come into this mansion and there are parts of it that you can't reach because you can only jump so high. And one of the things that is in the environment that you can move around is a safe. Now, safe is a really heavy object. You can't move it by yourself. However, when you switch to Fluffy World, now it becomes a big pillow safe. It's real lightweight. I can pick it up. I can throw it. So I can move it over to where a platform is, set it underneath that, switch the world back to normal stasis, normal state of world.
Oh, okay.
Jump on top of the safe. Jump onto the platform, advance forward.
Gotcha.
So maybe advancing that a little bit beyond there, if I make that safe light through Fluffy World, once I've thrown it, if, for instance, I then had the ability on my other trigger to make it heavy and more durable, I could switch it from being super light to super heavy to where it might crash through a window and shatter a piece of glass.
Hmm.
And then I could advance past a glass panel.
So what all filters did they show besides Fluffy World? Like,
So far they've shown Fluffy and Heavy. And based off of things we've seen, there's likely to be some fire and some water to quench it. And
wait, the whole world? What? I don't
exactly know how they're going to work. I mean, they've been kind of guarded about some of this stuff. So, and I've only demoed the game a couple of times. So I've only seen Fluffy and Heavy and played around with them. And then the other thing is when you go to Heavy World, it makes an item more durable, which allows it to block lasers. There's lasers.
Oh,
there's
okay.
also time stuff.
Oh, that's right. There's time.
That's
like slow down time.
I mean, that's where
that
the quantum conundrum comes from.
Interesting.
So you throw something, slow down time so that it's going really slowly, go to the other side of something, then change its properties, make it go fast.
Mm.
You know, you can throw something at the wall. It doesn't break it. But if you speed it up and throw it at the wall and it's heavy, it'll break it.
Very interesting.
Without blowing too much, one of the end puzzles that I was looking at today involved making something light, throwing it, turning it heavy, having the time kick come in, and then platform jumping from time-slowed platform to time-slowed platform to get it through.
That sounds, I mean, it sounds cool, but that sounds crazy complicated.
It really wasn't that crazy. It was really, it's pretty simple. It laid out in front of you pretty elegantly.
But I would hope that it ramps up to be pretty layered.
Well, one thing I really
like, control wise, like that was,
it controlled really smooth.
I mean, but I mean, doing the, okay, I'm going to throw this, then I'm going to change it, then I'm going to jump on this and slow that down and do that.
The stuff towards the end that I kind of lost patience with was when you had like a split second to, like, you know, you had to do something at the top of a bounce, and it sounds like that you might, kind
you,
of stuff.
There is some of that. You might not like it then, but I really like that stuff. I thought this stuff was
like
really
you're talking
fun.
About aha moments. Very often you have an aha moment when you just happen to turn around when you're bouncing on some of the gel, and you're like, oh shit, that's where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah, there's definitely,
and they have that in this.
Okay,
it definitely seems like it's 50% mind, 50%
like, you know, reflex.
Reflexes.
Yeah. So.
It's the time stuff is interesting too, because wasn't that in that the final hours of Portal 2 thing,
it
like
was.
A part of the reason implied or stated that she left was that left Valve partly in frustration with where Portal 2 headed, and because there was some mysterious mechanic, I think it was time based, that she thought would really work, and other people thought it was too complicated and too difficult, and they just kind of agreed to disagree, and she parted ways. So did she say anything about like this is the idea that I was working?
She didn't. Okay. However, I can tell you this: if you're interested in the game, the one thing that's going to be great about the new emerging models we have in the market space is that this game is going to be provided as a free demo with a in-game, buy-the-game option.
Oh.
And that's on PSN, XBLA, and PC. So it's...
Well, they're doing that model on all three?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I played it on PS3, and I said, oh, that's pretty cool. You're doing that on PSN as well? And she's like, yeah.
When does
so
it come
let's
out?
Let's go. They haven't set the final date yet. However, they are about a week from going to CERT, so...
Oh,
you can figure they're right
soon.
They're right here.
Wow, really?
They're finished. No, yeah, they're code done. Complete. They're code tomorrow, complete. So. They're ready to go to CERT.
Wow, that's
and what we played exciting. Was what we played at this event is the full free demo level, and it's plenty. Like if you play the free demo level, you'll know whether you want to buy the game or not. I think it's a really genius way to do it. I love that we're getting sophisticated in digital distribution like that.
Cool. I feel like I haven't heard much about it for it being so coming out. So
you know, it's
soon.
A game they put together really quickly. Right. Obviously, I mean, that's one of the things that's exciting about the lightweight digital distribution platform is that you can have really great folks making fantastic games, and they can put together a game in a 12-month cycle.
Yeah.
That's one of the things we talked about with the guys from Robot Entertainment who made Hero Academy, which I'm sure, John, you'll be interested to hear about this conversation. And I think we'll pick that up on the other side of this little break. Mr. McDonald, do we have to let you go?
Yes. Yes, I can go back to Japan now that I've done what I came here to do.
Video game Jesus.
Thank you for having me. As always, a pleasure. Awesome.
Sideburns are spectacular right now, by the way.
I needed a haircut like 2 months ago, and I was so busy coming up into this GDC that, yeah.
So if you're not already, you should definitely be subscribed to 8-4 Play, the premier podcast.
Thank you
very
much.
And if you need evidence that his sideburns are amazing... He referenced them as part of his haircut.
I know.
That's how
amazing,
amazing
it is. It all
they are
like
luxurious.
It law, it's flowing.
Barber
it's now
to
all,
handle his sideburns.
It's now all part of one just ecosystem that I'm not going into.
You should bring them down further and make a sort of more choppy kind of thing. Because I had chicks love that.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
How would you know?
Really quick before you go, not to get off on a huge whole another topic. Have you played Azura's Wrath?
I have played just
well,
the demo.
Playing Azura's Wrath is kind of a stretch, right?
Experience.
I've watched and occasionally touched some buttons.
Yeah.
I played the demo only.
I have
but
observed
not the
it.
Final game.
Okay. All right.
Now you gotta say.
That game totally won me over, man.
Cool.
What?
I dug the shit out of that game.
It's kind of like watching.
You didn't have to do anything?
Well, I mean, you do. Well, I think the fighting engine's actually pretty cool.
Right.
Because you're doing it. You don't do it all that often, but fighting action is really cool.
There are parts that are you're actually, it's not just quick time events. You're actually fighting, controlling
the
whole thing.
It's a lot of war-y combat.
Right.
Yeah, it's a really cool, robust fighting engine that is different than any other fighting engine I've ever played. Handles differently. I love the idea that you're not taking down a boss by getting his health down. You're taking down a boss by working your power up.
Or smashing a planet into him.
Or smashing a fucking... And it's just batshit insane.
Yeah.
That's the most fun part of it. It won me over because of how fucking batshit insane it is. And you're watching it like, none of this should work. But it all, like all the to be continues and shit, that shouldn't work.
Yeah.
But every single time I was like, wow, okay, maybe I'll play one more episode because this is crazy.
It's totally set up like they even take like kind of faux commercial breaks, right?
Yeah. Lost kind of like boom. You know, just the logo comes on for a second to give you that shouldn't work.
But it made an awesome anime.
Right.
It is an anime. The animation is spectacular.
Yeah.
I was impressed with it, but I was wondering, you know, Japanophile over there. Dug it.
So there you go. Search for it in the iTunes store, 8-4. That's the way to find it. 8-4.
8-4 play. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Great to have you here. We will come right back. And of course, since someone's stepping out, you know what that means. We have Plan B. Waiting in the wings. Always there for us, Mr. Billy Berghammer, who will be up next.
One
weekend continues.
Sorry, wrong one.
Wrong one. Fuck you too, Mark.
That's what I meant to hit there.
Welcome back to the CBSi Studios. Thanks again to John Davison and all of the crew over here at GameSpot.com. If you haven't checked them out in a long while, they have come into the 21st century.
And beyond.
Lots of great content there. We love you guys. I'm sharing the love because this is very, very generous of you to afford us the use of this. And it's
Swank
really appreciated.
Man.
Really appreciate it.
You like the soundproofing? We're just those particular parts of the wall are the important bit to soundproof.
Right. The sound doesn't...
The rest of it's fine.
It doesn't even know to go over there.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way it's supposed to be, right? That's actually patterned reflection.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
It's the way it's supposed
to be. Off on a tangent.
And now...
Buckle up for another throw ride.
All right. I'm fucking leaving. It's all right. You have Plan B here. You guys,
Plan B in the house.
Wow!
Triumphant return.
It's been a while.
It's been too long.
Come all the way to the Bay Area to get back on the podcast.
I did. I didn't even come here for GDC. Just like Mark, I came here just to be on the second half of the podcast. No, I was really.
That's why you are Plan B.
I was really disappointed because I was supposed to be on right before I moved, but moving, if you've moved before, sucks balls. And it just
especially that far, huh?
Yeah.
Crazier.
What'd you live now?
I live in Seattle.
Uh-uh.
So I decided LA was, I needed to move. So it was good. And, you know, I wanted to be on the show before I left, but it didn't work out. So I'm glad I got to be on today. So thank you.
So have you been doing any GDC stuff? I got to talk about something GDC.
I have.
Well, lay the GDC on us. I teased that we were going to talk a little bit about Robot Entertainment. We could do that, or we could talk about GDC. Either way.
Well, you talked to them here.
I did talk to them. I did talk to them. So it was funny enough that I'll preface this with a anecdote about running into Jeff Green last night at the SimCity event, which was funny enough in that Jeff went over to EA once upon a day to work on SimCity, the SimCity that didn't happen before they rebooted it yet a third time to make this SimCity, which Lucy Bradshaw introduced.
And he had the best tweet of the night, I think, Jeff Green.
Which one?
He said when the guy who founded Twitter was talking, he said that...
that was the guy who marketed Twitter.
Well, whatever. The guy from Twitter is talking and no one's listening because they're all on Twitter.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty funny.
And also, and he had a follow-up tweet, which is like, you know things are bad when the guy that started Twitter is getting a bad rap on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was an event that happened.
That was.
Yes, it did.
So what I told Jeff was that I had talked to these guys at Robot Entertainment, and I remarked to him about how, you know, it was all the old Age of Empire guys. He went, what? They're the old Age of Empires guys. So if you didn't know that, yes, the guys who made Hero Academy and Orcs Must Die are many of the folks from Ensemble who made, well, since we talk about Halos.
I've run into many people during GDC this year that have like sort of playing Hero Academy confession stories. I was talking to a guy last night who used to be at Rockstar and he's now doing his own sort of indie development thing. And he was saying that he and his wife have a no iPhone games in bed rule.
Wow.
And but Hero Academy is so addictive that he'll turn the brightness on his phone down and like, you know, be lit when she's asleep. She'll be like, he'll be like lying on his side and playing Hero Academy. So
I could be having sex, but
you know what I think they need like the equivalent of Urban Spoon, but for Kama Sutra. You know, where you like flip some
where you just shake it.
Yeah, you like shake it. No.
And then a position comes up.
Yeah.
All right.
And no, you're not with me.
No.
I bet you would make a mint with that freaking thing.
Maybe.
I do it anyway.
Not been, you know, clearly not been, you know, married for a while.
Yeah, creativity isn't the problem.
Oh.
If you need a nap for that, you're doing it wrong.
I don't need a nap. I don't need a nap.
Honey, look, my phone says we should do it like this. Oh, does it?
Oh, good. No, you're making me hot with all that app talk. Anywho, so what did they tell you at Robot Entertainment?
I'm totally trying to catch up now with
the Hero Academy.
Hey!
Hero Academy is awesome. And it's made by the people that made Age of Empires.
And within the next few weeks, universal iPad version.
Oh.
Yes.
Just in time.
Just in time for the new iPad. So I'm pretty excited about that. And we talked about...
now you're getting a new iPad.
Yeah, I am getting a new iPad. Unfortunately,
I bought two today for some reason.
Let's talk about the iPad for a second, can we please?
Sure. We will shift gears and talk about the iPad, and then we'll talk about Robot, and then we'll do on whatever you saw at GDC. So, what about the new iPad?
I bought one.
Me too.
It's four iPads in one.
But clearly, they're positioning it. I mean, brought out Epic, brought out Namco.
Yeah.
Clearly, positioning it as a game device.
I know he's always been sort of on this side of the fence, but I met with Neil Young at Engie Mocha today, and he was like, today you watched the beginning of the end of the console business.
Wow. Oh, come the fuck on.
Tell me more.
So graphics processor is comparable to an Xbox 360 now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That with AirPlay to, like, the TVs are coming this year. They're going to be AirPlay enabled. You're going to be able to have your iPad in the room, zap something. I mean, did you see the Infinity Blade dungeon screens?
Yeah,
my gosh. You know.
Yep, yeah. That's all we want to do anymore is just flick our fingers across the screen, and that's just like Mass Effect.
But it's Bluetooth enabled, so if you want a controller, you can use that. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, this is now everything that the 360 can do in a device that you can also take
with
you.
It's the Phantom Lapboard.
So AirPlay can do video out then?
Hmm?
So the video from your iPad
goes over the Wi-Fi to the TV.
Oh, cool. My receiver's AirPlay enabled.
Of course it is.
Kick ass. Word.
You're set. You don't need a new Xbox, so you won't want one now, right?
No.
You won't get one.
But it's got a better resolution than your TV.
Yeah. Dude, millions of people won't want a new Xbox, right? Because they've got one thing that will do everything.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess the new Xbox has to be better.
Yeah.
Significantly better.
Better.
Yeah.
I think you guys are all just a little bit off the deep end here on this thing. So, yes, iPad 3 is going to be awesome. And I'm an iOS.
It's not iPad 3. It's just iPad.
The new iPad. It's just an iPad. I'm sorry. It's just the new iPad.
Coming next year, the new iPad 2.
The new iPad again.
You know what that is? Planned obsolescence, people.
Yeah.
We're calling it something that you can't even get anymore. That's planned obsolescence. That's
Apple. Have you watched
it's
Apple
smart
before?
Because it's not like you're not like, oh, do you have the iPad 3? Like, do you have the new iPad? Done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing that I bought 3 years ago, which is no time at all.
That's mm-hmm. old and busted.
Yeah,
and busted.
Is so old.
So your 6 year old Xbox 360.
Its identity has been removed.
You know what? Let's wind these conversations together, because one of the things that I found that was really interesting in talking to Patrick, the co-founder of Robot Entertainment from Ensemble, was a discussion about where AAA game design had been, what made their game successful, because in addition to Hero Academy, they also made Orcs Must Die, which mm-hmm. was the AIAS strategy game of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you look at both of their games, they're rooted in – they're not reinventing the wheel. They're rooted in great game design.
And there is something happening right now. If you look at what's happening to the PC space and what's happening in the free-to-play space and in – I mean, the MOBA thing is a subset of that. And you're looking at what's happening in the mobile space, and they're all converging on something that doesn't exist yet. There is this thing in the middle of all that stuff. And it's coming. And like, it's either going to be League of Legends for iPad, or it's going to be something on that level where it's like something that everyone in the core set is very comfortable with, mm-hmm. remapped to work with a touchscreen so that it feels completely natural. And mm-hmm. that's the inflection point. We're not there yet.
Right.
But what these guys are doing with Hero Academy is a step in that direction. And other people are experimenting with stuff. And it's cheaper to develop. They don't need massive teams. The distribution is easy. There's no publishers in the way. And it's like, I mean, like, the
so
end
I
of it is not,
are.
I mean, there's, but the publishers are going to crumble because of the distribution. The studios distribute themselves now. You talk to a lot of mobile guys at GDC, and they're like, well, we might sign with a publisher if we want to get some marketing muscle behind it. But if we can get people to talk about it before that, we don't need them, you know? Yeah. And people like THQ, that level of publisher, this is why they're fucked.
Yeah.
Well, even I was at the Pub Fund, I call it the TED Talk today, but Ted Rogalski, the guy that works with PubFund for Sony, I mean, they just showed this, they're like, yeah, you could just be some guy, one guy, and you could just publish your own game. You don't need a publisher. You can just go there
and go straight to the platform.
You know, and if you have something crazy, unique, and awesome, you know, and I forget the name of the game that they showed today, but it looked like Crazy Twisted Tempest that was like Mizuguchi barfed out. Like it was.
Look, I don't want to get too far into Abrasa's talking about business and industry trends, but they're is still definitely a case within the structure of running an economy in the video game industry for having marketing and for having the guy who's going to make that game. Yeah, it's great to make a student game, but he's going to make one student game, and eventually at some point his case in life is going to move forward to a point where he needs to be having an income and needs to be, you know, not knowing whether or not he's going to have money for ramen cup of noodles next week is not really going to be an okay thing, right?
But that doesn't need to be AAA. I mean, Temple Run was made by a husband and wife.
No, I understand that.
The wife like had a job while he learned how to code, and they've sold 40 million copies of it.
But for every one of those, how many are not making it?
Well, but that's the beauty of that ecosystem is you can have so many that didn't make it.
Yeah.
You want to make the next Call of Duty, I'm sorry, it's not going to happen.
I think that you're taking it way off the end of the extreme as the counterbalance. I mean, I'm not saying you have to jump to saying I'm going to make the
there
next
is no
middle.
I mean, the sad thing of what's happened in the last few years, there is no longer any middle ground.
And I think we need to reestablish that world.
Yeah,
that's exactly
it's
what I'm saying.
It's gone. I mean, like,
and
if
I think
you're,
it will
if
be
the audience wants it.
Sure, they do.
I'm not sure. I'm
good
not sure they
good
do.
Entertainment that I can consume every day.
I feel like
you're
going to
pay
lot of...
$50 for it. It's not going
to
happen.
No, not pay $50. No, definitely not.
Where free to play comes in. That's the new.
I agree.
Second tier down is that you gotta do it a different way. But you can't stick it on a disc and sell it for $60 anymore.
Now that I agree with 100%. I'm a big supporter of that idea. Like the $60.
But that's, I think
game
that's where
is.
That talent and that energy and that imagination needs to go. And right now we're just calling it something different because indie is capturing it in free to. We've got to stop talking about free to play like it's a genre because it's not.
No,
it's like it is a different way of distributing stuff, and the platform holders need to get on board with it because right now, outside of PC, I mean, I'm sorry, but Killzone 3 is not free to play. It's a demo that they will then charge you $15 for. You know, I mean,
absolutely.
They need to go. You know, we need to go all. I mean, it was interesting to hear that the Quantum Conundrum thing earlier, that they are actually looking at in-app purchases the right way. You know, we'll let you play it for a bit and
play the demo.
Yeah,
it's essentially the old Wolfenstein model.
Right.
It is that old. That is the oldest of three and a half floppy drives.
Shareware.
It's here, shareware, and if you like it, buy the full game.
Yeah.
Don't you think that there's a sort of a ghettoized mentality to free-to-play that needs to
No, I think there has been.
Well.
I think it's starting to change significantly. I think it's really starting to change.
15 million people playing League of Legends helps.
Yeah.
That's but not ghettoized.
When free-to-play initially happened, it was a sign of this game's dying, so that's why how they're going to quickly or try to like get back to having some people playing the game. You know? But now, you know, as you said... games are starting that way.
So, John, you were talking about AAA development, middle ground, and one of the things, talking to the Hero Academy guys, is one of the things that they find really exciting is having ground themselves down on these long cycle Age of Empire games where they were milestone after milestone after milestone. It's like a long journey to ship. They've shipped two games that have been wildly successful with their audience in 6 months.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And they love it.
Yeah.
They love the rush of that. And an interesting knock on to that is that now they're looking at Hero Academy and there's this ever-growing demand for, we want more. They're going to get the iPad version out. There's demand for more races, and they're, you know, they can keep building on that because they understand how to do the rock, paper, scissors dynamic. They understand how to bring new elements into the game. But they're starting to look at it from the standpoint of, so where do we take the off-ramp? Because what they don't want to do is become Angry Birds. They don't want to be making just Hero Academy because they love this.
They'll do Hero Academy Space.
They don't want to do it because they love the rush so much of having done this. They're like, you know what? We're going to do 3 to 4 months more of active development on Hero Academy.
And then do a new one.
And we're going to do something new. And as a matter of fact, they've already, as a matter of fact, they've already got something new cooking.
I mean, that would be.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
So the other thing that's cool about this is that that model allows them with a team of 50 players to be active not only in Hero Academy, not only in Oryx, which they have some stuff, ideas working on that, but they're already cooking their next product, their next game. And they're not – so it's not a – it's not the old model of I have a studio, I have Team A, I have Team B, I have Team C. It's I have these guys – and we're working on this, and we're working on this, but we're also prototyping this, and we're playing with this other idea. And if
it's
that comes
the
together,
way game development used to be back when there was a lot of energy and guys could like bounce from project to project, and they weren't, you know, you didn't need a lighting guy and a rigger and a 3D modeler and an environment artist and a texture artist and a, you know, God knows. I mean, there's 400 people on Call of Duty last time I heard, right?
Yeah. Ellis was saying they just when he a couple months ago there were 38 people on the Halo team and there's 300 now. Yeah.
Wow. That's a hell of a team.
Yeah.
So you excited for more Hero Academy? Excited for Hero Academy on iPad?
Hero Academy a lot.
I as much as I love that game, I just feel for the Plaid Hat guys, and I really hope that when the Summoner Wars app comes out, it gets as much love because it's the same fucking
board
game
allegiances come through.
It's the same game that's been around for 4 years or 3 years or whatever it is. Yeah.
So there's a talk coming tomorrow, I believe it's tomorrow morning, about asynchronous play being the future of multiplayer.
Draw something. We got to talk about draw something for a moment.
Well, I was we can talk about draw something, which you turned me on to today, because that brings up the
topic. Try it?
I have not yet.
Oh, that brings so up, good.
Because I was changing all my passwords to everything and jettisoning stuff. But I was actually going to bring it up in reference to SSX.
Yeah.
Because I think it's really cool how the conversation so quickly built around SSX multiplayer, despite the fact that it wasn't about me racing you. Mm-hmm. It was about, how can I challenge you? How can I do better than you?
It's autolog, but not as clear.
Yeah.
It's not multiplayer because you're not playing.
Sure.
It's asynchronous multiplayer.
And it's not even really asynchronous multiplayer to the extent that
it's
not
posting a time.
It's posting
a time.
Yeah.
But I feel
like I'm playing against you.
Yeah. I played Need for Speed Hot Pursuit in a completely different way because of autolog. Yeah. I just think that did it. I thought Hot Pursuit did the best job of presenting this to you in terms of chat. I just find SSX way too bogged down in its own kind of this mythology they're trying to build that I just could not give a shit about.
Yeah.
Like, just tell me how fast Billy got down the hill so I can beat him. Yeah. I don't need to know about Griff's sponsorship problems or whatever the fuck he's telling me. You know?
Well, let's be fair to the game, though. They were going into the Call of Duty dark survive all this hellish snowboarding, apparently.
And SSX is now an acronym.
Oh,
for
God.
Snowboarding, surfing, and motocross.
Yeah. Fuck me, are you kidding?
Yeah.
Did you not know that? Fuck you, are you kidding me? Like, really?
Really?
Yeah.
So there may be a sequel, guys, and it may have motorcycles in it.
They had to reboot. You know, they were already halfway, probably more than halfway through development of that game, and they had to clean out all the Call of Duty crap that backfired immediately on that game,
and the vestigial remains of it are
they're still there.
Crappy.
Yeah, I mean the survival.
What
parts.
Was the Army of Four play thing that people thought might be announced too? Did you see those rumors?
Yeah, but I don't think that had anything to do with SSX though.
Okay. the whole bro thing.
Apparently, I missed that. But you know, the whole survive it thing is just.
It's not fun.
No,
it's the opposite of fun.
Well, you have to play it differently. You have to snowboard like an old man.
Yes, exactly. Which is exactly what I look for in my SSX game.
Oh, really slowly.
That's basically what Dan said. Slow is steady and steady is fast.
Except when you're doing the thin air ones where I completely go to pot because by adding one additional button into the control scheme to do the breather, I completely fuck up everything else.
Oh, it's terrible.
Like, I'm like doing
what's
all
the,
these
stuff. What's the breather?
So when you're doing Everest and the really tall mountains,
you need oxygen.
And there's a breathing mask.
So you have to pull a mask.
And you have to press a button to breathe.
It's like Blue Velvet.
Right, and it, and then there's a sort of vignette effect that, that contracts, and if it goes all the way to the middle, you die. But that additional rhythm that you have to do with that button just completely throws me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like chewing gum and patting your head.
Mm-hmm. Just the whole concept of death in SSX fucking sucks. I'm sorry, right. That pisses me off. Falling off a cliff, really, that's fun.
Yeah, and rewind is no good. Is no not.
All right,
fun,
so let's not bash
useful.
SSX.
Yeah. No, it's a
There's a lot to read.
When I was initially on the show, like the first couple times, we're doing Kanata 4, and I did SSX 3. I love that game. That's what I want. A successor to that game.
It's in there. It's
an SSXer.
It kind of is. I mean, there's still no half pipe.
That game is awesome. It has the same vibe as 3, and there's a lot of Tricky in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that.
I loved me some Tricky.
And you can pretty much avoid the parts you don't want to play.
Yeah. The economy is a bit forced.
Yeah.
And the fact that you can buy EA bucks or whatever the hell they are, like, I mean, you know, if you really want to.
Yeah.
You know, EA is really getting a grasp on microtransactions very quickly.
Yeah.
And it's a little scary because I was just talking to Jeff about the microtransaction model in Mass Effect 3, and it's pretty smart. It's really smart. In the multiplayer game.
By smart, you mean devilish.
I mean devilish. I do definitely mean devilish. So in the multiplayer mode, there's your persistent character in Mass Effect 3, and you are persistent character that is not Shepard. So you have just the class types. So you can play a Vanguard and different types. And you have your skills that you level up, and that's all well and good. Mm-hmm. And then you have...
Is this where the war points come in or whatever they're called?
You have per match perks. So you can have an armor perk and weapon perk. Yeah. And those perks are much like the cards in Ultimate Team in sports games.
Oh, really? The FIFA cards and stuff?
Yes. So you earn credits by so every time you play the game, every time you play multiplayer, you earn credits based off what you do. And what's really
I'm also earning in Infiltrator? What's the currency that I'm earning there?
That's the iOS game, right?
Yeah, but that feeds into the
Into your war effort. So that is really cool.
That's another economy?
That economy has to do with how well you do in the single player campaign. Let's just talk about just the multiplayer component.
I haven't played it. This is my saving it for the weekend game.
The problem is you can buy that shit.
So in Mass Effect 3, the way this works quickly in multiplayer is that there are packs, and the packs include things like different races in character classes and then these randomly unlocked perks that you could get per match perks. And you can get them through in-game currency that you earn by playing matches, or you can buy the best one for 120 Microsoft points. And you're like, wow, 120 Microsoft points. That's great. That's like $2. And that's how I'm saying they've gotten devilish, is that they've reduced. Right. They figured out that by reducing the price so much, it becomes an impulse buy.
They're not that good in SSX. It's too expensive. Like
here, it's an impulse buy. Yeah. And there's been a little bit of complaint about the Mass Effect multiplayer and that it's really set up for 4-player. But I love it. And
this is a game, going back to what we talked about earlier, this is a game where I have absolutely zero interest in the multiplayer. Like,
say that now, wait till you play it.
I only want to play this. I want to see how the story ends. I've been around people playing it and the whole sort of...
Till you play it, John. I wish we could have this conversation after you played it, because the multiplayer is horde mode with Mass Effect's class system tied into what you're doing in the single player world, because it makes sense.
And it's got the space wizard stuff as well, right? So whatever they call it. What is it called in Mass Effect? Biotics, right?
Yeah.
It does have biotics. Space magic.
It's Jedi shit. Come on.
It's midi-chlorians.
No, it's not. It's nothing like Star Wars at all.
It's not like Star Wars.
It's not like Portal. We know that.
Is there a fluffy environment?
Yes.
Do you get to jettison things?
There's a ballista. There's a ballista you pull back. Kinect control.
Really?
Kinect control in Mass Effect 3 is quite interesting. Ariel liked it. I was nonplussed by the whole thing, but she sort of liked the whole deal. It adds a layer. You know, as you're playing the game, it's so much a shooter now that having Kinect control is essentially giving you another button on the controller.
So that's how you open doors and stuff, right?
You know, you can also command your teammates with that. So you can say, Garrus, shotgun. Garrus, armor piercing. So you can like give them commands through that methodology.
So it maps the wheel.
Right,
and if you
think about the way you play in an active mode, so of course you still have the ability to pull up the wheels and pause play and choose your selections very tactically. But if you're playing this as a third-person shooter and moving through it very quickly, you can map your powers to buttons and D-pad, but now you have another mapping through your voice. And that really is about what it amounts to. It amounts to, I can have one more mapping by saying Garrus power, Liara power. And that's fine. It's cool if you want to, like, if you're in that mode of I'm just blazing through this thing.
See, I think I still would rather have that. If I was going to do that, I think headset would be more comfortable. I just feel weird talking that loudly.
Without a headset on?
Sex with that alien. Have sex with that other alien.
Wait, is that Jessica Choba?
Stop. No. Just say no. Just say no.
I play Mass Effect like a complete whore, so that's
that's new. Fuck anything.
There's that option. I'm all about it. And I play with a fem shep too, so.
And she's a slut. Yeah, she is. A prostitute.
Do you have to go down to the doctor and get rid of your crabs every so often?
Well, that's a microtransaction, actually. You have to pay for it.
It's a macro transaction.
It's like $6, too. Jesus.
Oh, you can tell where this podcast has slid off to. Anyway, Mass Effect 3 out now. We're gonna
talk about it more because I haven't fucking played it yet.
We're gonna hold because
GDC's thing sort of happened.
In the
it's
way.
Kind of happening.
It's kind of happening. In fact,
yes,
I got a couple of GDC things I can bring up because we haven't talked about really. I mean, what have you seen at GDC?
One wants to hear about Mass Effect, right?
David Cage demo. Tell me that.
I don't know. Do you like the heavy rain?
Should we talk about Kara?
I like the heavy rains.
So, Heavy Rain's all right.
Okay, so he did that before Heavy Rain came out. They showed it behind closed doors a lot, and it's online. You can check it out. But the casting, which was kind of their tech demo for Heavy Rain. And so this is their new tech demo before their new game. This has nothing to do with, you know, their next project. He was very, very specific about it. Sony even posted something on the blog. This is not their next game. Because it's not, I mean, it's basically, his whole talk was about full body motion capture. Because obviously, if you saw the facial tech that they did in Heavy Rain, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, you know, super advanced. And so, you know, they're working on it even more now. And I don't want to spoil it because you can get the video somewhere and you should watch it because it's very emotional. It's very interesting. It will remind you a little bit of the casting, but it's more futuristic. Like at first thought, I thought it was like
the last
kind of doing Portal.
30 seconds are emotional.
Yeah,
it's a 7-minute video, and the last
it's like
30
Mass
seconds
Effect 3.
Are emotional.
The last 30 seconds are emotional.
Oh, okay.
Oh boy.
He went there.
Anywho, so they're making a game out of this, is what you're saying?
Well, yeah.
He says they're not.
That's what Sony
he says
said
they're not,
blog.
But
right.
He totally is.
No.
Of course they're not. It's just a tech demo. It's just some stuff.
What I did think it was cool.
And it's a garage project.
And I tweeted about it, and I got crap about it. But they're going to release it to the fans as a free download. Now, I think what he was trying to say is that it's running in Real Engine, and that you're going to be able to see running on your PlayStation 3. Yeah. I just thought it was cool. I mean, I was a big supporter of Heavy Rain. It was my game of the year that year.
Me too. It was Toilet Retro's game of the year that year.
Yeah, I fucking love that game and just very excited to see more of it.
Billy, did he talk at all about whatever happened to the idea that that game engine would allow them to create content on top of it as if it were a,
like,
you know,
episodic?
Yeah. Well, episodic and like a video show or like movies.
I mean, that really wasn't the subject of his talk. It was more about...
And I think he backed away from that because Heavy Rain wasn't exactly a...
But I think
runaway
that's it.
Success.
It wasn't the success it needed to be.
The platform is still there, and it seems fairly apparent that the tech that this thing is built on is a development of that. But I think they need a good solid foundation if they're going to do something like that. But this is Heavy Rain in
you know I wonder
space,
I wonder how much
basically.
Of how much of the success of Heavy Rain had to do with it being. I mean, what if you took the Heavy Rain idea and applied it to a licensed property that brought a lot of marketing moxie to the table and was very accessible for folks? So imagine, if
you're
you will,
saying
now,
Heavy Purple Rain.
Spider-Man crying there. Upside down.
No, but you know what would happen if,
Dad!
If they did that? Is I think it would get dismissed.
You think so?
I think if they did, I mean, it would lend itself to CSI or,
that's
you
what
know, and it would just get overlooked as being another crappy CSI game. It looks really cool. You know, I think they would have to be very careful about how they position that. But you're right. I mean, I think that's the direction that things are going. And I think as the power of everything that we're playing on gets more and more powerful, that we are going to see things of that caliber. And they're going to be, you know, a couple of years from now, they're going to be $5 iPad games, or they're going to be Steam downloads that look that good. And it is going to be more about playing with your emotions and it being an investigation and more a little more passive than... I mean, that was what I really liked about Heavy Rain, is that there was a passive sort of lean back, kind of just
at times
enjoy the story. I mean, I actually found that the really engaging parts a little distracting because they were they took me out of the sort of gentle rhythm of the rest of the game, you know. And suddenly it was like
I found myself on the edge
the
of my
gentle
seat
rhythm
times.
Of heavy rain.
But it was nice, right? I mean, it was like it was kind of mellow that it got that kind of interactive movie, for want of a better expression, down pretty good in that you could just sort of let it take you along with it. And it was when it had these sort of artificial pauses from time to time that were a bit distracting. And I don't think he's that good at character development, though. I think that was always my my sort of beef with it.
Absolutely.
One other note is that the demo that they showed is a year old. So this is my hunch, it would be that we'll probably see the next project at E3. But that's just my gut.
Hope so.
Saying that.
Did he say if Sony were involved? I can't remember.
Yeah, I mean, right at the beginning of the demo, it said it splashed up the Sony computer.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
All
right, so we have structural pauses in this show. There's one more segment to go. I challenge all of you guys to figure out what you'd like to talk about in that last segment to wrap up this big show. And you got to be monumental because it is Brooklyn's last show with us as engineer.
This segment is going to be 3.5 days long.
So we're going to dedicate this last segment to Brooklyn for taking great care of the Weekend Confirmed share over 103 episodes. Thanks, Brooklyn. We will be celebrating you again at the end here in another few minutes, but we're going to take a little break. When we come back, these guys will have a big wrap-up to our GDC show.
I want to learn emotion.
Sasha, come here. I just want to say one thing. If we don't get out of this alive, I just want you to know one thing. Your ass looks amazing. Your ass looks amazing.
I want to learn emotion.
Are you kidding me?
Emotions. I want to learn emotion.
I was
just making sure that I didn't say something wholly inappropriate.
Your ass looks amazing.
Oh, God.
I want to learn emotions.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not proud of myself.
No. The entire city is under siege right now. I do not want to get a drink.
I want to
you.
Learn emotion.
There are robots attacking me. Why are we talking about that?
I want to learn emotion.
I
want to learn.
I do not want to get a drink with you.
I want to learn emotion.
I want to learn emotion. I want to learn emotion, Jeff Cannata. Can you teach me emotions?
Why was I programmed to feel pain?
I have no idea. So, you know, we touched on this very briefly earlier. There is a new Medal of Honor coming, and it's going to evoke...
Medal of Honor gun shooter.
Warfighter.
What's it called? A warfighter.
Warfighter.
Explosion maker.
Warfighter.
It almost was explosion
Kill
maker, but
doer.
The dart went to warfighter when they were just chucking
Medal
that shit
you guys
in the hall.
You guys
Death.
You guys
Medal of Honor beard wearer.
You're a tough audience. You are a very tough
shooter.
Audience.
Bromancer.
Bromancer. Bromancing the throne.
Bromancing the throne.
Gun trigger puller.
Dude, that's what happens to me at about 3:30 in the morning after I've had a bottle of Jameson.
Bromancing?
You bromance the throne?
Wow. I saw a game on the show floor called Warface. I think we've talked about it before, and it's awesome. I just love that title.
Warface.
Which I've often called Warf Ace, you know, the game about the fighter pilot from Star Trek. Warface.
Oh, my Lord.
Set your phasers
I
to
miss
fart.
You guys.
I don't know. We're going to talk. Did we start the show again already on the fourth segment?
I think so.
I thought we were going to talk about Warfighter, which was Medal of Honor.
Yeah, you're talking about.
I was
going to
talk a little bit about that because we talk about Frostbite 2.
Beards.
And beards. And the topicality of it. Because one thing I thought was interesting in their presentation about Medal of Honor was that they went back to this idea that Medal of Honor was always rooted in historic operations. So you had Operation Market Garden, and you had the Normandy invasion, and they were focusing on this idea that it was all rooted in some sort
fighting
of
fighting wars.
Imagine that. But also rooted in real operations, and they were trying to bring that idea back in a modern era.
Right.
Talking about things that we tend to think now, I think, in a modern society are really swept into realms that we don't have any way to get to as an ordinary person. Like, we're not going to know what the CIA is up to. We're not going to know what special forces teams are up to.
But I think a lot of this is PR, right? I mean, like, the first one
of course
was,
it's PR.
Was very, very Afghan conflict. This is probably what it's like for these guys kind of scenario. I mean, that's the problem with doing a modern warfare game, is that there aren't many things you can really hook it to. There aren't those sort of symbolic moments like Market Garden or storming the beach at Normandy, or, you know, I mean,
there's some shit happening.
Some shit happening
somewhere.
And it's really brutal and like it's nasty and it, but it's not the same kind of thing because we don't have the visibility into that level of operation, right? And a lot of it isn't on that kind of scale. So it's got to be tough when you're faced with that. Like, okay, do something that iconic that everyone is going to recognize that happened, you know, in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And that was one of the points that they brought up, is that everything you see in Medal of Honor is something that if you pay attention to headlines on CNN, they feel like you should recognize where this came from.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you won't necessarily see it, you know, bullet point for bullet point exactly as it went down in the news chronicles. However, you will say, oh, I remember that. I remember that happened. And the demo level they showed was, interestingly, out of the Philippines. And it was a hostage rescue situation, which of course, is pretty
topical.
Yeah.
But that's not a war. That's just like a skirmish.
So I think this is also...
Skirmish fighter!
And it's that's the
XBLA version.
Yeah.
It's also part of what they have to do now that Battlefield 3 is their stablemate. And this is Frostbite 2. You know, one of the advantages that Medal of Honor should have is that it's just one engine this time.
Right.
There's no like... danger close building a single player game, and then, oh yeah, we need a multiplayer game, we'll do something with these guys. This is now everything on Frostbite 2.
Did they talk about the multiplayer at all?
They did. So one of the things that they're going to, the idea behind multiplayer in this game, although they're not willing to dive into it very much, is this sort of who's the best amongst all of the...
Oh, right. So it's the equivalent of tier one from everywhere in the world.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah,
so it's
as they
the
call
SAS
it
SAS and
blue
the...
on blue, blue on blue. So it's the...
I still think that room I was in for Medal of Honor, when it was just dudes wearing ski masks and the whole thing was like... I had suspicions that the whole thing was just fake. Did any of you go to one of the PR events for the original Medal of Honor where you weren't allowed to see the faces of the guys that they were working with?
No, but that sounds hilarious.
Yeah, it was just like three big dudes that were talking in very gruff voices about what it was like to be a tier one soldier. And,
yep.
But they were all wearing ski masks.
Their identities were protected.
Yes.
Oh,
so you would have laughed. You would have laughed last night because one of the things they said was, we have 12 tier one operators working with us on this game.
And they all have enormous beards.
No. And they're among us right now.
Ooh.
But we're not telling you who they are.
They're the waitstaff.
See that gigantic guy in the background? Looks like he could break your neck.
Not him.
Totally not that guy. No, it's to do with the Affliction t-shirt over there. That's the guy.
The six uninterested guys hanging out in the corner over there.
That's him.
They're not sold
at
the
open bar.
So I thought that was interesting. You know, I talked to Grant Goodrich, who's the executive producer on the game, and one of the things I immediately confronted him on was complaints about the first Model of Honor reboot being very scripted and having, by virtue of that, a challenge to being believable, because you get into the game and if you hit those points where the scripting doesn't work, which I hit one where it was like, because I wasn't hitting the right scripting point, there's something not happening and I was dying over and over and over until I was able to just slip into the right corner to where the scripting could carry through the rest of the way, and then I could get around the corner and go through the doorway that I was supposed to go through. Really stupid. And he said that he talked about how he copped to it right off the bat. He said, yeah, that was bad, and we know that's bad, and we don't know how we're
back to the Halo conversation we had earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that last game we made was shit. We're making a better one
now.
So
he didn't say it was shit. What he said was he knew it was bad, but we don't know how exactly we're going to get past it right now because we still want to make a story. We're still trying to tell a story, and there is a certain degree of scripting that we have to do in order to tell a story. And I'm cool with this because back to the Mass Effect 3 thing is that if you've been following Mass Effect, there's some complaints now about where the story resolves itself or doesn't resolve itself. And if you leave too much open, if you leave things just to players, it's hard to draw that great narrative arc.
Can you tell me the story from Call of Duty right now? Can you tell me, outside of Soap, do you remember anybody?
Because that badass thing? I remember that.
Yeah, I mean,
there was an EMP blast that went off in space, and then something crashed in Washington.
Which Call of Duty are you asking about?
Any of them.
Oh, hold on. That was Modern Warfare.
I mean, Yeah,
I remember that part in Black
Ops.
You're
comparing that to Mass Effect, which is an RPG, and that
was me.
The story does matter.
So trolling aside,
I'm not trying to troll.
No, I was trolling. I was trying to troll.
But you mentioned Mass Effect, and I think where Mass Effect came unstuck is that the characters are ultimately disposable. Because
in Mass Effect?
Yes, because if yeah, but they are, because if anyone died, you just get a replacement vanilla version. Like, if Rex died, then, we've got some other guy who looks a bit like Rex, who's not as interesting, and he's going to join you. It's like in Star Trek, you know, when there's only one Klingon that you could actually name, but there's a bunch of other guys that look like they've got,
About Warface?
Yeah. And it's like, Larry. But I think this is the conceit that a lot of these, like, very scripted things is that, you know, it's back to the same thing about consequence, right, is that... Oh, there's all this consequence, but it's not really consequence. It's just that you just get a shittier version if you fuck
up. So let me
up.
Ask you a question then, since we're getting into the little esoteric game design part. How much consequence do you really want to cope with when you're playing a game? How much do you really want to be,
punished? The tank, do you want to be able to go into a situation where I don't have the tank. Not like, oh,
do
look,
you? Do you really?
We found another one.
Yeah.
No, John,
well, that brings up...
You're saying that a bit flippantly. Do you really want to go into a situation that's tough where you needed a tank
but you don't have
a tank?
Don't lie to me about consequence. It's like... It's like make Dark it Souls. Feel... Like, I'm supposed to feel something if I lose someone, right?
It is like Dark Souls.
Yeah, I mean... You know, you freak the fuck out when you're getting to a boss fight. You're like, oh, shit.
I don't have the right armor.
I didn't get to a fire. And, you know, and this is coming from the guy that totally shit all over this game on the show. And then I ended up playing it a couple weekends in a row. And I really, really got into that whole tension of that. But, I mean, I don't see that happening in an action game like Medal of Honor or a Call of Duty or anything like that. Like, you want to go and, you know... Have your bromance and shoot the shit out of some cool stuff and have some really awesome movie, summertime movie experience, you know?
Well, you know, one of the games that I played yesterday was the Xbox version of Witcher 2.
Mm-hmm. I played that as well.
A game that is very serious about consequence, I think. And one of the new quests... What, you giving
it's
me the...
No, I'm saying it's fantastic.
That's a furrow of agreement, not a furrow of disagreement.
That was you realize that was Shaq News' game of the year.
I do realize that. And one of the new quests that I was able to play... was an example of what the game does over and over again, which is there was a moment where I had a note, and it was the note that was going to accuse the king of doing something he says he didn't do, and he disputes the veracity of the claim, and then you have to go and get it tested. And if you have a clue...
There's a number of ways to conquer this, by the way.
Exactly, and if you have a clue, you have a clue as to one way to test the veracity of the claim by putting chemicals on it. But it doesn't say put chemical A into chemical B. It's an actual riddle, which is so rare now in video games to have an actual puzzle that you actually have to think about. And if you do it wrong, the letter disintegrates.
It's gone.
And that's it.
Yep.
You can go back to an old save, but if you don't, it's gone.
But
you
got
to figure out another way to accomplish that.
Well, not only that, but you still have – you are then presented with that idea of, okay, so now what do I do? Do I want to go make an accusation? Do I feel really strongly about what's been presented in front of me as the evidence of this person is to blame? Or am I siding with this other person? And that's what's great about The Witcher. And that's the reason The Witcher was our game of the year, is because it has those layers of intrigue. Unlike almost any other game that I've found before. You know, BioWare's games have fantastic sets of choices. And they love to lay those choices out in front of you. And Bethesda's games
have... All the way to the very end.
All the way to the very end. And to their detriment, all the way to the very end. And Bethesda's games go a step further in that not only are there choices with the narrative, but there's this incredible buffet of game things to do in front of you. And like, what do you want to do? Here's all these things.
But they do manage to hook you to attachments, right? I mean, Lydia is mostly not that useful, but you feel... I mean, you feel an attachment to her. So if you lose her, you do want to go back and find her. And like, to go back to the Medal of Honor example, is I never felt during Medal of Honor any sense of genuine camaraderie with any of the other guys
that's fair
in the story. And it's the same in Call of Duty. They're just
Or is there any first-person shooter, though? Is there any first-person shooter, though, that you can think of?
Well, Halo experimented with it in a slightly more effective way.
Bad Company really tried
And Bad Company did it good because they had personality as well. But it's unusual, and it's like, for all the talk about this stuff, about how important it is, like, not enough energy is put into it.
And yet, when you come to The Witcher, you feel as if you are in that sort of high fantasy crossed with soap opera a la Game of Thrones.
Yeah, it's very similar, in fact, in a lot of ways. A lot of parallels.
And they hate that description. I told them, guys, this is the way people will understand what your game is. Your game is...
It's a political game.
Is these folks where you start to understand the machinations that are going on behind the scenes for these people who are trying to manipulate these political forces. And then you can be... You're not going to be the wheel, but you can be the guy who comes in and makes one wheel work or another wheel work and breaks another wheel. So
you're
not
going to be the wheel of time. You're going to be the song of Ice and Fire.
You're going to be the guy who comes in.
Niche joke right there.
That was a very niche joke.
Wow, that was good.
Way to go, Belgarian.
Also, the new CGI intro trailer for The Witcher 2 on Xbox is one of the coolest CG trailers I have ever seen.
From a tech standpoint,
freaking amazing.
One of the things that's really interesting is that CD Projekt Red was, although they won't admit to it, obviously working side by side with the PC and the 360 version, because this game is code complete.
Yeah.
And it's a fantastic 360 version. I don't see it as a port.
I've not tried it yet. Does it run okay?
It does.
It runs great.
It looks great. I didn't see any frame rate problems, and it looks really great. I mean, I
it's a very small bit of draw-in.
Hardcore PC guys just going to go... Phew. When they say it.
Yeah.
Well, hardcore PC guys can run it at a higher resolution,
yeah,
which is one thing. And then they're bringing down the textures very slightly, and they're using a little bit of draw-in to where as you pan around a scene, if you're looking off to the horizon, there's some stuff that will stencil in as you
But boy, there's a couple of vistas they showed that I was really impressed with. Yeah, yeah.
I'm impressed.
It looks excellent.
I'm impressed that the character models still bring that same fidelity, that the experience is recreated completely in whole.
They never did the first one on 360, right?
No.
There was a rumor that was going to happen if they were working on it, but I think they just sort of moved that tech over to working on this engine and getting it complete.
I've never played either of them. I've just sort of, you know,
they're two very different games.
Second one is...
Do I need to have played the first one to enjoy the second
one? No, not at all.
One?
As a matter of fact, there's a big jump.
I didn't.
There's the narrative arc that draws them together, and there's the idea of the Witcher and the world that you'll understand. Mm. But the systems and the game, the way the game is put together, is wholly different.
There's a little bit of niggle in the back of my head whenever I'm joining a franchise midway through, and I feel like I should have gone back to appreciate where it came from.
I know what you mean, but I really enjoyed it too. And if you get a chance to play it, I think you would like it a lot. Okay.
You know, on that mark, I think that one of the most impressive accomplishments to me of Mass Effect 3 is that I checked it out from a standpoint of just coming in with a fresh save, and it's very playable. Mass Effect 3, for as much as it is a culmination of this huge epic you've played through three games, is very, very playable as I just walked in and played this game.
So I've not played it, but I've watched people, because I'm a reviewer, it's right outside my office. But, I mean, it struck me that it makes a lot of assumptions, though, about your knowledge. Like, if you not only that you have played at least Mass Effect 2, but you also like played some DLC. I mean, like there's references to the Arrival DLC, and it's kind of like if you weren't paying attention, then you're not really going to know what's going on here.
Was it the kind of thing where that stuff can just sort of wash over you if you don't know what you're missing?
I think so.
But I think the significance of what they're putting in front of you will be completely lost on you. You know, it's like, yeah, I think you can let it wash over you, but I think you're really going to be losing something.
Should that significance be lost on you, though? Is that big a deal because you don't know what you're missing out on? And here's my point.
I don't know. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, watching, you know, the last Lord of the Rings movie without having watched the first two, right?
Yeah.
I disagree a little bit. And here's why I disagree.
It's in space.
I disagree.
All right. It's like watching Return of the Jedi first.
Well, I do think that if you play Mass Effect 3, you're probably going to want to go back and play 1 and 2. And you'll have that journey, and you'll make your decisions for yourself on how you feel about...
We went back and played 1 this week. 1
Did you?
Was not as good.
I'm a big 1 hater. I feel like I'd forgotten how egregious
that freaking filter they put on everything was.
Yeah.
1 was awesome.
I mean,
driving around was fun.
Yes.
I thought the story was great, but the gameplay was great.
Driving around wasn't that great.
I didn't even think the story was that great, but...
I really got swept away in the whole thing, and I've read all the books and
Then you're gonna you're the man about that.
You've read the books.
I read the books.
Nice. Nerd.
So how many
the academy the academy shows up in
my
3.
Femchef,
the academy is important.
Have sex with by the time 3 is over, because right now I'm just kidding. If you know all the ending.
Speaking of games that I didn't play the first one of, but I'm excited about the sequel.
Segway.
Clumsy. super surprised that I fell in love with this game that I saw a demo of today, Risen 2 Dark Water.
Really?
Not on my radar.
You are smoking crack.
At all. Why? What?
It is so clunky.
What? What are you talking about?
It's really clunky.
In what way?
You know what? I've
seen it. It's a freaking robust role-playing game where you're a pirate. That's awesome.
Sold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are there ninjas in it?
All right.
You can be a pirate or a voodoo dude.
Oh, we didn't get to the best part. You can get a parrot or a monkey.
You can get both.
Or you can get
both. It's not an either or, bro.
Dual wield?
And when you get a monkey, you can...
And then can you lock them in a cage and make them do it and like have some like horrible distorted like
monkey
parrot?
Monkey? Merit or punky?
Can you launch them with a catapult?
With
the
connect.
Parrot, you can throw at any creature and it distracts them while you shoot them in the face with your blunderbuss.
Wow. Is that what you're calling it now?
Yes.
Blunderbuss.
Dudes, why? I don't understand why you think it's clunky. It's not any clunkier than any other role-playing game.
Oh, it's far more clunky.
In what way?
I think the combat in this... So I think that the thing about Risen is that it very much wants to bring over all of the... So Risen is a franchise.
I'm getting an undertone here of what you need to know about Risen, Jeff. Is
I never played the first one,
is that it's
so
shit.
Maybe I didn't realize how shitty it was.
Not shit. You didn't get that from Punky.
But it seems like it doesn't have anything to do with the first Risen.
It's
pirates
that.
Now, which is and cool. I'm telling you, it's cool.
It wants to tap into that PC gamer idea of lots of statistical influences on action gaming, a la Deus Ex. And yet, are you telling me that when you drew your sword in that game that it felt as good as
I
even Oblivion?
Yeah, I felt
much
fine.
Less,
I
much
felt,
less Skyrim.
You know what?
I'm just
saying like
Oblivion,
me,
not even
like
Skyrim.
It felt like fighting in Assassin's Creed, which is not great, but it's serviceable.
Okay, we disagree.
I mean, it didn't feel any... Crazier.
I felt like it feels clunky, and there was a lot of times where I'm swinging a sword, and then I feel like there's like this moment where the computer is deciding, did he swing the sword at the right time with the right motion? And by the way, what's his saber wielding attribute? And what's his
man? I thought the stat system was really, really cool.
The stat system is cool.
Yeah,
I agree. The stat system is cool. I think that this is one of those games that starts to have that part where I feel like the fabric's being torn asunder by
a knife because you're a pirate. It was in your teeth, and now you're tearing it asunder.
Yes.
Boom.
I've never heard the word asunder used twice.
This show's awesome.
Walk the plank, mateys!
Wow. I'm really surprised. Anyway, that was my biggest surprise.
Genuine disagreement.
I think so. I think they're going to fight.
I was not expecting anything from it. The game looks gorgeous. You're a pirate. You get pirate flunkies that you can hang out with. You can do voodoo magic. I just love that it's such a breath of fresh air.
Further, I may pee a little.
I mean, I'm not supposed to talk about it. There's a lot of stuff that I can't talk about because
you
it's
can dribble out
embargo.
The bear. The hair.
Square out a little tiny bit of just nervous.
I thought it was cool.
If it had connected.
So since you saw that, you obviously saw dogs. What's it called now? The
I didn't see that.
The UFG game.
No, I didn't see that.
The old true crime Hong Kong. What is it? Not
straw. No. Something dogs begins with an S.
Straw dogs?
Scurvy dogs?
Stray dogs.
Stray dogs.
Scurvy dogs.
I don't know.
That I would play.
Dogs asunder.
He got me all piratey.
That's right.
How did you go to Square and not see that?
That was the only thing I had time for. I was rushing to get here to play to hang out with you.
Dogs of
you
War. Dogs of War, by the way, that would be a great movie to make into a game.
Mm-hmm. Dogs of War.
So wait, did you see the dogs game that I already can't remember the name. This is why how bad that name is.
United Front Games, which I saw years and years.
Oh, no, wait.
Ago.
I have an appointment to see Straw Dogs tomorrow.
Straw Dogs. Is it Straw Dogs?
It's not Straw Dogs.
Sleeping Dogs.
Sleeping Dogs.
That is it.
I have an appointment tomorrow to
I
see
think
that.
There is confirmation that is not a good name.
So, Sleeping Dogs is the game that was True Crime Hong Kong.
Right.
That those guys bailed out on, which I think was a shame. United Front, though, has, I think, put to good use the time they've had to polish on the game. Number one, the combat is now essentially the Batman combat.
Right.
So
all games should be the Batman combat as far as I'm concerned.
So basically they took the idea of, so instead of you being Batman fighting thugs in Gotham, you are now a badass undercover policeman fighting martial artist thugs in Hong Kong. And it
works.
I'm not
going to lie. It's not as cool.
Okay, but so hey, this goes back to something we talked about. Do you think anybody gives a shit?
That's
damn, anyone going to buy this
question.
Game?
I don't know.
Like
a damn
when Square Enix announced that they picked it up or whatever, my first reaction was why?
Mm-hmm.
I hear you. I hear you. It's tough. I think that the game is fun. It has a cool sort of personality to it. It might be trying to be too many things, because the other big thing is that...
And it comes out this year when GTA 5 comes out.
It needs to get the hell done. It needs to get the hell done and out, because obviously...
If it was the Batman combat, that would be cool.
The Batman combat is good.
Better than GTA's combat, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, you're right there.
And I had a lot of fun playing it. And by the Batman combat, I mean that it has the little flash over an opponent's head when it's time to parry them. And then you parry them and get the reversals. And in this case, instead of reversing them in a Batman sort of way, you reverse them in a martial arts sort of way. So you get a different sort of limb breakage.
I remember playing True Crime when it was at E3, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
And it looked surprisingly good. I mean, because I didn't like the True Crimes beforehand, because they were ridiculous.
This is not ridiculous. I think
there's no dragons in people's basements in this one.
This is not ridiculous.
There's no dragons in people's basements. And then keep in mind, these guys are out of Vancouver. They have a lot of the old black box guys, so they also have that racing heritage, and there's a lot of racing games in there. And something they showed a year ago was this idea that, okay, so in addition to having these point-to-point races as being a cool guy in Hong Kong, there'd also be places where instead of driving, you were in the passenger side and having things happen. What they showed was you're riding an SUV and you had to defend the SUV with your gun as you're driving. And I think they're going to continue to develop down that idea of, well, so what if I wasn't driving the whole time? What else could I do while a racing game was happening?
So it's like San Andreas where you're shooting outside the window?
Yeah.
Or like
True Crime.
Oh, wasn't there some stuff in L.A. Noire like that as well?
I didn't play L.A. Noire.
Yeah, there was...
La Noire.
But True Crime had that too. The True Crime L.A. had that.
Yeah.
You know.
Before it descended into just total shittiness in the last two hours.
It was pretty shitty in L.A. But I bought that game. I remember I bought that game to see if I could drive to my house. And I was so pissed when I couldn't.
Well, they made a big deal about all of L.A. is mapped in this game.
Nope.
But I can remember, that's probably one of the most incredulous I've ever been at a game while playing it. Like, playing it through, and it's got this whole gritty, like, Yakuza vibe. Yeah. And you play it for, like, you know, 8-9 hours. And then there's this sort of, what the fuck moment in the last hour where it's like, I'm fighting what?
Yeah. That does happen.
It's better than fighting a volcano.
That's true.
It's better than fighting a volcano.
What is that a reference to?
Lair.
Oh.
Yeah, it's probably there.
Okay.
All right, so as we wrap up this show, we've been accused a lot of times of having a negative outlook on Vita. And the two guys across from me, Billy and John, both love their Vitas. So I thought I'd let them...
I wouldn't go that far.
I thought you'd love your Vita. I thought you loved your Vita. Like, when we asked what to come back to guys...
I said I wanted to talk about Vita. I didn't say I loved it.
I finally got to play Sound Shapes, and now I love my Vita. That should have been a launch title. That is a killer app.
It is.
Talk about justifying the back touch. I think the editing mode with the back touch, it's way better than...
I like reach around for that function.
I thought it was surprise rear touch.
You never have to justify your reach around.
Surprise rear touch?
No, but I mean, like, when you're editing something, my big fat fingers are always getting in the way, you know?
And that's what she
finally
said.
Wow.
Why is she talking about editing? Reach around and poke it from the back.
I just think it works really well. Anyway, I'll let you guys talk about the Vita.
No, but I think you're right that is they should have absolutely done it at launch.
Yeah. But the only downside is that for a mobile platform, it's a game where I have to be playing with earphones, which kind of sucks.
But that's happening a lot across all mobile formats. There's a lot of games now that the first thing they do when they load is tell you that you should be listening on headphones.
Yeah. Yeah.
The speakers on the Vita are actually pretty surprisingly good, and they're powerful. If you have the thing cranked up, it's loud, like more than an average, you know, portable system is. But I don't know. I was very surprised.
You're just waiting for the PSP Beats version.
I was very surprised with the Vita. You know, I've only had it since the normal U.S. launch. I didn't go for the early adopters kit. But I like it. You know, and I remember hearing so many people on podcasts, like, bitching about the whole UI. They're like, this UI sucks. It's a fucking iPhone. Like,
no,
it's just has
not.
Circles instead of squares.
No, it's
why?
Not.
Half the circles
you really
like,
need to buy a new, you need to buy a new iPhone.
It, unless you can't make folders. But, like, I don't understand why it's so bad. Outside of, you know, okay, fine, you have to exit out. You have to do a couple extra things. I really didn't think it's
well, you gotta exit
that bad. Like, I don't know.
You peel the sticker off and then you gotta...
I don't know. I just didn't think it was really that awful.
Off and then you gotta, like...
So what are the games you're enjoying, Billy?
I am playing the shit out of Hot Shots, and I know that's such a generic game because it's just Hot Shots, you know, but I really, I love it.
And quick side note, sorry, did you see the guy that has the game that he was showing that is golf through Twitter? Do you see that?
No.
It's called Twitter.
No, it's a iOS game, I think, I'm pretty sure, that you're playing golf, and the way you do a shot is you do a word, and then it queries Twitter and finds out how many instances of that word just were.
And that's how many yards you've done?
And that's, yeah. So you, if you need a long, if you're doing a tee shot and you want a long shot, you need to have a word that's really common in the last minute or whatever it was.
A
and if you're, putting, you want to find a word that's really rare in the last. Pretty clever, I thought. Anywho.
That's, I want to, we'll talk about this after. Pretty I want to check that out. Yeah. But I'm playing a lot of Hot Shots. I have not gotten MotorStorm yet, which you mentioned.
Yeah, it's free. MotorStorm on C is free. Have you played Wipeout?
I have not.
Wipeout is very, very good.
What
I loved about it is it all came flooding back. You know, like, I haven't played a Wipeout game for a long time. I didn't really get into Pure on PS3, although I hear that's really good. But it just works really, really well. I mean, it looks beautiful. I mean, my problem with the Vita is that I think there's so many flaws with the device and the decisions that they made and, you know, with how they're selling
it. You know,
I
took a lot of hate for having this. You would be careful. But I took a lot of hate.
But the games are what are going to... It was a strong launch lineup. I mean, like, you know, we have Metacritic. We ran out of this building as well. And, like, there were more games with 80-something plus Metascores at this launch than I've ever seen at a system launch.
Mm-hmm. And so, it's dangerous as hell that if you have a big, you know, memory card, like I bought a 32, I'm not buying any physical games, but, you know, it's really dangerous. It's all the games.
But that's the only way I want to use my Vita. I don't want physical games. I like being able to just tap, like I would on my iPhone, just tap the game I want to play and not have to switch out the little postage stamp.
Yeah, which is super tiny and scary. Mutant Blobs is great. That's really a lot of fun. If you haven't checked
out of nowhere.
It's super rad. And that's the PubFun guys too. Luminous, can't go wrong. Like I just really, really, really
No, Milky nailed the soundtrack for that game.
Also nailed how making us all like not feel as bad spending more on Luminous after for the last 3 years it's been a $5 tops mobile game. Like, I mean, they really kind of blew it out, and I mean, it's beautiful, and the soundtrack's fantastic, and it has Howard Jones in it. Howard Jones!
Things can only get better. I didn't
know that, but that's awesome.
There's a Howard, yeah.
That's fantastic.
Things can only get better.
Exactly.
The ending of the show.
I was just going to say, the cross-platform stuff, I think, is very exciting. What I really hope they do, obviously, I think we're all in agreement on the pricing of games, but they need to do, like, one... Like, do a package deal. If you want it on both, like, for example, the show's coming out.
The show is doing it right.
You know, well, can you buy, like...
It's like 80 or 70 or something.
It's like a bargain pack to get both.
Oh, there is.
Yeah.
I hope they continue that on that path. I like the MotorStorm stuff where, well, it's free for Christ's sake, so I really can't, you know, can't really bitch about that. But I want to see more of that.
I mean, they'd previously announced that if you bought one, you would get both with that one. Mm. The PS3 version is $10 and... You know, if it hadn't been for the Scion sponsorship, you would have got a download code with it.
So. It should be like they do on iOS with the plus. If it's got a plus next to it, you know,
it works on both.
Yeah. That'd be awesome. It would be awesome.
It's been awesome having Brooklyn take care of us for 2 years. Oh, over 2 years, Brooklyn. Over 2 years.
Her 2-year warranty ran out is the problem.
Should have bought the extended warranty.
Damn it.
So what are you going to do from next week?
The show's going to sound like this, and...
I mean, look, we're very fortunate to have a great relationship with the Atlantis Group in Santa Monica, who takes great care of us at the studio. And there's still fine folks there, and they're going to take good care of us as well. But, I mean, we've sort of built a personal relationship with you, and we want you to have a fantastically successful future, and just tell you that Weekend Confirmed loves you.
Love you guys, too.
And we miss you. Yay. We're going to miss you already. But Brooklyn will be back. Sometime, maybe when we're up for PAX or something.
Definitely,
she can tell the enforcers how to run the soundboard to make us sound good or something. We'll be there again this fall, I hope. This has been a lot of fun, guys. I miss you guys, and it's fun to have everybody back together.
It is.
It's good to be back.
We're not gonna do finishing moves, but if you guys want to throw something out, feel free. Be my guest. Anybody?
I look so
they're like deer in headlights. You want to be done? Finished?
I don't know. You got anything?
No, I don't.
Totally rad
do you
show.
Think of, what do you got? I mean, vibe on GDC this year. It's only half over, but
it's
any vibe
weird
on it?
Because there's no keynotes. Like, usually they, you know, Nintendo trots out Iwata because he's cute and he's funny and that's awesome. But last year was a commercial for the 3DS. So, but I like having those. I like kicking things off that way, and it just felt weird this year.
Yeah,
not having those tentpoles.
John, I've not. There seems to be more people here than ever.
It is really big again.
Well, they made it right because Apple was also happening.
But I mean, like earlier on, we were down on the corner of 4th and Howard, where the Moscone West is, and There's that NOS thing, and then Nesquik are giving out chocolate milk for some reason on the corner.
Gamers love chocolate milk!
Tasty.
And the cops were having a really hard time keeping the intersection clear. And I don't ever remember it being like that at GDC, like being that packed trying to get in. And it wasn't when it opened. It was like middle of the day. And I think there's a lot of energy in the indie scene right now, and there's a lot of small crews doing mobile and web, and you know, I think the stuff that Google's doing with Chrome and the announcements that they've been making this week that aren't GDC announcements but are sort of on the side, and how they're bringing Chrome and mobile and their client stuff, and From Dust is coming to Chrome this week. You know, I mean, like, there's some really interesting stuff. So there's a lot of really small development studios that are getting a bit of funding, and they're a real part of the creative engine this year. And you can tell that there's a different vibe this year, where it's, and I think what you see on Twitter is there's a lot of people saying, can the big publishers just get out of the way?
Great point. Can they get out of the way, and can they stay actually having a space in the business, or did they just get out of the way and be forgotten?
Well, for something like GDC, they need to get out of the way and let the development talent shine, and then use the show as a way to be like, that guy had a good idea, we need to talk to him afterwards. But instead, they're sort of inserting themselves a little too aggressively.
Interesting.
Lots for you guys to talk about this week. Join us on shacknews.com in the show thread, of course, to keep up with all that. Billy, where will we find you anymore?
You won't.
We won't find Billy anywhere. He's disappeared.
I've been consulting, actually. So I'm working with this company called Gun, and I see...
Well done.
It's been a lot of fun. It kind of came out of nowhere, and who knows? There's a couple other opportunities that are happening. So,
congrats, bro. Good to hear you're doing well.
Thanks.
And John, of course, is taking care of GameSpot every day, which is resurgent, doing an excellent job, doing lots of video stuff on YouTube that you can check out. They have completely recast everything that they're doing, and they're right there, right?
Thank you. It's nice that people are starting to know. I mean, it takes a while for people to notice, so it's nice that people are now.
Oh, look how humble he is. Oh, he's blushing.
Well, no, I've been through this a few times, right? And, like, when I did it with GamePro, and, like, you know, there's you make changes, and you wonder when people are, because people are still like, you guys suck. And I'm like, well, we've not been doing it like that for a while now, and we're just, right now, people are starting to notice, which
is
nice.
I'm not always good on with my Britisms, but I think I'm supposed to say good on you.
Oh, thank you.
Good on you. And, of course, Jeff all the time, every day.
Totally Even though he thinks Risen 2 is good.
Or maybe he's right.
What? That's a first.
I would be wrong as usual.
Anyway, you can follow me on Twitter, of course, at Jeff Cannata with 2 N's 1 T. Yeah.
There you go, everybody. Please feel free to hop into the thread and wish Brooklyn the very best as she moves back up to the Pacific Northwest. We're going to miss you, Brooklyn. That is your Weekend Confirmed. Until next week, we are Ghost. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Yeah, come on. It took a minute for me to see what was going down. My body's vibrating, pulsating to the sound. Hey, bartender, hit me with another round. I gotta finish, she's ready. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.